Gentlemen, welcome to Fight Club.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 131 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm tired. But I'm going to fight through it for you guys and for the dear listener out there.
Fight for this love, Ben.
We're recording later than usual. It's Sunday evening.
Do you know what this is? It's Skip to the End nights.
I can imagine that usually the tired ones turn out pretty shit. But sometimes we can overpower it with our kind of like, we can get through this, and they turn out great.
All right, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens then. Let's tell the people what's coming up on the show.
Let's do that. So we're going to kick things off with a nice, juicy topic, our top three satirical movies.
Ooh.
That's going to be amazing.
Had a big response on social media as well.
We did indeed, and we'll get to that in a bit.
Our rewatch this time is Fight Club, and it is time for us to actually talk about it.
Good.
Aha, see what you did there.
Nice.
Our main review is Doctor Sleep, the follow-up to The Shining.
Ooh.
I'm intrigued to see what you think, especially Gemma, our resident Shining fan.
What will we think? Well, we're going to do MMD as well, Movie Masturbate, and we're going to be masturbating over Darren Aronofsky. I can't say his name without saying it in that sort of singy, songy way.
Darren Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah, it's got a nice ring to it.
I'm glad I've not got to say it. And, as always, we're going to deliver a brand new quiz. And at this point of the show, you won't know anything apart from it's brand new.
Mm. Yeah, let's put an asterisk next to that. You'll see when we get to it. It's not quite brand new.
They've rebadged it, you fool.
Yes.
And, of course, we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We've got another huge sack of prizes to give away, and we will give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Lot to get through. I'm really excited and, as I said, quite tired. So let's get started.
It's our top three satirical movies time. And you know what? I had people stopping me in the street this week. I know, can you believe it? Me. They don't know what I look like, but they went, Gemma, Gemma. And I went, yeah, what's up, mate? And they went, you're all right? I said, yeah, I'm all right. They said, what's satire? And I went, oh, I'm glad you asked. It's the use of humour, irony, exaggeration or ridicule to expose and criticise people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics and other topical issues. And then they went, cheers, see you later.
Wow.
Welcome to Gemma's Dictionary Corner.
Hello. That's amazing.
What other words do you know?
I'm glad you did that, because I was, when you announced it, I was like, yay, what's that?
Glad I could help. Yes. So that's what we're going to be talking about, guys. And I think this is going to be quite a good one. So, Ben, I would like to offer you the first spot to tell us your first satirical movie that you like.
I'm going to open it with Starship Troopers.
Yay!
Oh! It's Paul Verhoeven's gung-ho sci-fi action film about a crew of soldiers colonising distant planets while exterminating an alien race known as Bugs. And to many, at the time of release, that's all it was. It was a gung-ho sci-fi action film with lots of gore. But that's because a lot of people failed to see the satire at play. They didn't look at the subtext. The film had a lot more going on beneath the surface. It was a satire on right-wing militarism, on jingoism, on colonialism. And of the very movies that people mistook this one for being, you know, those mindless shoot-em-ups, it was satirising those too. And the film was based on the book of the same name written by Robert Heinlein, which was very pro-war and was very fascistic. So that's why Verhoeven, he sought to invert and lampoon that. He wanted to take it the other way. And on the DVD commentary, he said that the kind of thesis statement for the film is that war makes fascists of us all. And that's what he wanted to demonstrate. So rather than celebrating that, as Heinlein did in the book, Verhoeven sought to show how hollow that all that belief system is, really. And I think he does it brilliantly. It's an incredible film. You guys have both seen this film, of course.
Many times.
I love it.
So I'm pretty sure we rewatched it, didn't we, a while back?
Did.
Yes.
It's an incredible film. And one of the ways that he did this, one of the ways that he lampooned this kind of militarism is he traffics in Nazi stereotypes. So, for example, the uniforms that the soldiers wear are very kind of Nazi-style uniforms.
Oh,
and then we've got all the propaganda reels.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to know more?
Exactly, all those kind of things, which are like the old Leni Riefenstahl Nazi propaganda films. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that people didn't notice, because if you don't know your history, you aren't going to realise that he's commenting on that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there clueless.
Yeah.
And you're using a lot of big words right now. And he's supposed to be tired. And I'm like, how do I follow this? Because he's going on about all these isms. I'm
I
like,
don't know why, but in my head I thought, Mark just learnt fascism.
I'm like, what? I like it for just being a really good action film.
Yeah.
Lots of beer, lots of pizza. It is a very good Saturday night film that now is a cult classic.
Yeah, well, then I suppose to a degree then it works on two levels. You can watch it, if you're a simple-minded person, Mark,
yes.
You can watch it as a beer and pizza movie just for the action and the blood.
That's what I watch for. Explosions.
Shady. Exactly. But, you know, if you've got a brain in your head, you can then also enjoy the satire.
Yeah.
But that guy in the end of the film didn't have a brain in his head.
No,
got
that's
sucked
true.
Out.
I think the film was ahead of its time, to be honest. It was one of the most misunderstood and unappreciated films ever. Like Mark said, it's a cult film now. Because it got shitty reviews across the board when it came out.
Yeah, really bad. And so, honestly, if you read the IMDb stuff, everyone hates it. Mm-hmm. It's only those cult people that love it as a cult classic
now. I mean, you think, you got Casper Van Dien, you've got Denise Richards. You know,
those two are great, though, because they're not taking it too seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
It worked in Denise Richards' favour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's she doing now?
Not a lot.
She's not doing Charlie Sheen, I know that. She used to, but not anymore.
Is that all she's famous for now?
That and maybe a failed Bond actress. Yeah, she wasn't that great.
She played a scientist
like Christmas,
in a Bond film.
Christmas Jones.
Wow.
If you can believe that. Yeah,
that is my rap name, just to
Brilliant.
Be clear.
That's amazing. So I want to give a really good explanation for my choices, but I went into Google, typed in satire films, and then I looked through all the lists, and I was like, that's a good one, that's a good one. So my first one is Borat.
That's a good one.
Jesus. And it's a great film. It's done in the style of a documentary, and Sacha Cohen, is that, what's his
name? Try again.
What's his name, Sacha?
Baron Cohen.
Baron Cohen.
There you go.
Is a genius. I do think he is a genius. He's up there with sort of, not as good, but he's got ideas like Chris Morris. He executes them well. He's gone downhill. Since he did Grimsby, we can't ever really forgive him anymore. I don't think he can ever really get that kind of sort of respect back. But in this film, he goes across the nation, meeting all these real life situations. And it's done in this documentary, but the public aren't aware. And that's what I love so much. When he's going to these rallies with all these Trump supporters and fucking psychopaths, he's going out there on a limb. He's really risking his health. You know, he's going out there and being an absolute crazy guy. He's going to conventions, he's going to just hotels and just being this character. And I always buy into it, even though I know it isn't him, because I've seen it like with Ali G on the 11 o'clock show and these early sketches. You wouldn't think an hour and a half film works. It's probably the most I've ever laughed when I've been to a cinema in my life.
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Usually if I watch a comedy film in the cinema, I kind of try and hold my laughs in because you're in public.
Yeah.
But I was laughing out loud, crying real tears watching that film.
Oh, my favourite bit is when he's butchering the American anthem and perfectly timed, a lady on a horse just falls over. And you couldn't time it any better.
But the sort of sidekick he's going around with, that big large guy.
Oh.
The opening scene when he's in the hotel, just kind of like, they're randomly like naked and resting on the bed. And you see his sack on his head. And again, if you want a good explanation why I'm talking about satire and stuff, you've come to the wrong place with me. Wait for Ben and Gemma. But it's a laugh out loud comedy from start to finish. And I absolutely love it. I think it's a great film. And I wish we saw more of the character because he left me always wanting more. And then he gave us, was it Bruno?
He gave us Bruno.
That was rubbish.
Yeah.
And Bruno, then rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah, and then now we've got Grimsby, so he needs something to come back with.
Well, he's sort of drifted into drama, hasn't he? He did that Netflix show, The Spy, which is very good. He's excellent in it, but he looks exactly like Borat. He's got the little moustache. So it took a couple of episodes for me to get over that and then start to see him as this other character, but he's very good.
So rather than like deliver a powerful monologue, you expect him to turn to the camera and go, Yakshamesh!
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll start singing, throw the Jew down the well.
My sister, she won the number one prostitute. But great film, and if does it count as satire?
Yes,
why
it does.
Not?
Brilliant. Just Jaws. Fuck it.
Okay, so let's redirect this back to the topic.
What? It does count. You just said it counted.
I know, but you also said that 2001: A Space Odyssey was a masterpiece, and then you butchered it.
Whoops.
So my first choice is Four Lions.
Very good, very
amazing
good.
Film.
Literally just mentioned Chris Morrison. It's about four bumbling British terrorists who train together and embark on a terrorist attack on the country. Now, the first question to raise about this film is, how do you make a topic like this a comedy? And Chris Morris was the right chap to do so. In natural fact, he did a lot of extensive research for this film. So he attended lectures on jihadism, met with radicals, ex-radicals, academics and community groups, and read numerous texts and books for the subject. And the level of self-education that Morris undertook for this is very evident in the film, because it doesn't poke fun at religion at all. Mm. It's really, the laughingstock is the four guys, the four terrorists that we see, because they're just ridiculous idiots that are very, you know, they're a very small minority of, you know, what people would attach for religion. Mm-hmm. They have nothing to do with religion. They're just absolute arseholes. But believing to declare war on innocent people, they are being completely lampooned in this film. I think the spearhead of this is Barry, a radicalized white man who doesn't know his arse from his elbow and is desperately trying to almost out-terrorist the other guys of the group. It's so brilliantly written. This comedy, I think, to me, is a real art form, if mm-hmm, anything, because mm-hmm. it's something that was never, ever attempted before, but it worked on so many levels, and some great performances too. You know, Kevin Novak, Riz Ahmed. And don't forget, let's be honest, Chris Morris is pretty much the king of British satire. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of The Day Today, Brass Eye, Jam. You know, if nobody has ever heard of those three TV shows that I've just mentioned, please stop this podcast and go and watch it and then come back to us. And then you'll realize exactly why we love Chris Morris so much. But it's just a perfect satirical film on jihadism and terrorism.
All I have to say is, fuck many baby bells.
It makes me want to go on a rubber rampy. No.
Rubber dinghy rapids.
That's the one. I turn into Mark.
That film is so funny. It's and great. It's co-written by Jesse Armstrong.
Who, of course, writes Succession,
the show that Gemma and I love very, very much.
Yeah, we were talking about it off air. Mm-hmm. I finished it.
Wow.
Finished both seasons.
Yeah, so good.
I will get on it, I do promise you.
I think you would really enjoy it.
I do think some listeners out there now will listen to you, go, okay, I'll go and check it out. Watch Jam and then never listen to our podcast ever again.
Jam is an acquired taste. Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, maybe, watch Brass Eye and watch The Day Today.
Maybe start off with The Day Today. Like, start them off gently and then get into the harder stuff afterwards.
Some of the Jam stuff, literally, even for me, I was not offended, I was just shocked.
Like, do you remember the sketch where the baby is dead? Oh. And so they get a plumber around to put pipes in the baby to bring him to life.
Yeah. That's the sort of standard you're going to get from this. It's not easy viewing, but it's very, very well written.
But go and watch it. You have to watch it.
I've still not seen his new one. I know you have.
No, me neither. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so I've seen The Day She'll Come, and it's essentially Four Lions 2. It's ploughing the same field, really, and it doesn't work as well. It didn't do a lot for me. It's intermittently funny, but it's nowhere near as good as Four Lions.
And it's got Anna Kendrick in.
It has got Anna Kendrick in, she's very good.
I love her.
Yeah,
me too. But Four Lions is a masterpiece.
It is. And it's, again, one of those films that either people love because they get it, or they just, I don't understand, I hate these jokes, they're not working.
Then they don't understand satire.
Neither do
Simple.
I.
Oh, bless you.
Yeah. But I still love Four Lions.
That's all right. Right, let's spin the wheel again. Ben, your turn.
Well, from one film co-written by Jesse Armstrong to another film co-written by Jesse Armstrong, I've got In the Loop.
That's so good!
It is indeed. It's Armando Iannucci's scathing satire about a bumbling British politician who finds himself at the centre of debate about invading the Middle East, and he becomes torn between the pro-war and anti-war forces in the American government. And for starters, the film is just really fucking funny.
Hilarious.
I've not
seen it.
Dude, you're missing out. It does everything it says on the tin in terms of being a comedy. It's really funny. And it's in the same style and features many of the same actors as Iannucci's brilliant TV series, The Thick of It. Did you ever watch The Thick of It, Mark?
A few episodes. Yeah. Because it had Doctor Who in it, didn't it?
Malcolm Tucker.
But yeah, Peter Capaldi.
Peter Capaldi,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And something that Iannucci is so good at doing is exposing the inherent stupidity at the heart of politics and how venal and self-interested politicians are, all the while pretending to give a shit about the people, to give a shit about the public, when all they give a shit about is themselves. And this film takes perfect aim at the bullshit and lies from the Blair and Bush administration that led us into an illegal oil war in Iraq. But it lightly fictionalises the whole thing. But then what it does that's really clever is it doesn't focus on high-level politicians. It focuses on like the low-level government drones who make all these huge decisions that send people to die in wars. Mm-hmm. But we don't really know about them because they're so low on the totem pole. Yeah. The cast is absolutely incredible. You've got Tom Hollander, who is perfectly cast as the doofus politician Simon Foster. You've got the late, great James Gandolfini.
Yeah. Oh,
he plays this imposing US general. And then, as you mentioned, Mark, you've got Peter Capaldi playing the same role in this film as he played in the thick of it as the foul-mouthed and ferocious spin Dr. Malcolm Tucker.
Fuckity-bye.
He's absolutely amazing. And one of the things that the film does so well, as I say, it looks at the kind of lower end of the political spectrum, is it demonstrates the reality of being a local MP. So one minute Foster is flying high, he's jetting to Washington, D.C. for these high-level meetings about, you know, invading in the Middle East. The next minute he's back home at his local constituency in Northampton dealing with bullshit.
Wow.
Dealing with bullshit like a constituent who's whinging because there's a crumbling wall in his mum's garden.
Steve Coogan, isn't it?
And it's Steve Coogan who plays the constituent.
Oh, lovely.
It's brilliant. It's a great satire, but it's also high farce as well. It verges on slapstick at times because allegiances are shifting and words are taken out of context, and then everything rumbles on into this kind of inevitable climax. Mm-hmm. And it was something of a shock when the film was nominated for the Best Adapted Screenplay at the Oscars. It's fully deserved because the screenplay is incredible. Mm-hmm. But for this kind of low-budget British film to break through in that respect was huge, and it should have won. It's as close to a perfectly written and constructed film as you'll ever find, with so many moving pieces working perfectly in concert with each other. But that's a hallmark of Jesse Armstrong and a hallmark of Armando Iannucci, who has worked extensively with Chris Morris. It's a very kind of insular society of satirists in this country, and they've all worked with each other many times.
Or as I like to call, synergy.
Synergy. Nice. Yeah.
Satirical synergy.
But it is a fantastic film, isn't it?
It's amazing. The ending really packs a punch.
Yeah, it does.
You don't expect just how affected you are by it, because they've ultimately decided what they decide. I'm not going to spoil it for you, Mark, but what they decide is powerful. It really does stop you in your tracks, and it just sort of, I don't know about you, but it made me sort of think after the credits were rolling. I was just like, Jesus Christ, is that what it takes?
And one of the great things that I read once is that Iannucci, when he was researching this, he wanted to get a look at what the White House was like so he could represent it on screen. So he basically went on a tour party, because they give tours around the White House in the US. So he went on one of these tours and then basically just fucked off from the tour party and just started wandering around on his own to get a look at what all the rooms are like and the layout.
Bloody old, what a lad.
Some balls on him.
I did see something today on Twitter. You know, obviously, we've just had Halloween, and so the White House opened its doors to kids come in and do a bit of trick-or-treating, and no joke, and I saw a photo of it, there was a section in the White House where they got kids to build a fucking wall.
Yeah,
I mean,
is it out of Lego?
I think it was like red post-it notes.
Oh my lord.
I mean, fucking, this is, we're not even, we might be in like the dark reality of this world right now.
Did you see Donald Trump turn up at a UFC event yesterday and get booed to fuck out
I
of the
did.
building,
and the baseball game too?
He's an absolute plum.
Oh, what a wank puffin.
I will watch this film though, because it came through a lot on social media, and I remember when we did our top three political films,
we did.
It was one of the biggest responses we've ever had, and everyone just raves about
it.
That's
awesome. So good.
Oh, sounds great.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this will qualify, because it did qualify. So
is it yours?
No, on IMDb, it was the number one. Okay. So, you know, when people vote.
Yeah,
and then on something like Ranker.com, it was in the top 10. Wall-E.
What?
It said Wall-E.
Okay.
Am I allowed it?
I don't know. I've never seen it, so I couldn't tell you whether it's a satire or not.
Yeah, explain.
Well, it's about a robot who's left on Earth. And it's been overrun by garbage and humans, and they've all fled to outer space, so this robot's all on his own, going around in a satire world.
A satire world.
Oh, we are living in a satire world, and you are a satire girl.
If I could edit that into a song, I would do it right now. And he thinks he's finally found a friend who's just another person that's collecting rubbish and stuff called Eva. And it's satire. It was the number one.
How? You can't just say that. You have to explain.
I gave a 3-minute monologue. It was you know, you should have been that person that came up to me with hair gel.
It was honestly on there. You type it in now on Google. It came up and I was like, I'm having it. I love Wall-E. It's one of my favourite animations. Pixar got it right. When you look in the glasses of it, you can see the reflections, and it's one of the best animations I've ever seen.
Okay, now, as I'm looking at my, because I actually wrote down the meaning. Okay, I can kind of sort of agree with you, because it criticises people's stupidity or vices. Towards the end,
the
when they're
humans,
all massive.
Yes, okay. They're all real. Like,
perhaps like couch potatoes.
They're living in the real world as being these slobs that are just sitting in these like kind of like chairs that are floating. And all they do then in life is just get fatter, eat crisps, order stuff off the internet.
Sounds like a normal
like
Tuesday night for me.
Yeah. eating Doritos, and their lives just become that. They don't even interact with each other. So, they're just so isolated so in this satire world.
It's maybe relying on robots and technology to do things for them, so therefore they become so lazy, they're so self-reliant on that.
I was just about to say that.
I bet you were.
Exact words.
Bet you were. Word
for
word.
Have you ever seen Wall-E, Ben?
No.
Would you ever?
Not now.
It's too satirical for him.
Way to hear my third choice. Gemma, save me.
I'll do my best.
Please tell me someone on social media came up with Wall-E, otherwise I'm fucked.
Oh, well, I can't wait for that section to come along. So, my second choice, let's get it back on track. This is Spinal Tap.
I've got it too.
Yes. Wunderbar.
Yes. High five.
Brilliant.
Yes. So it's directed by Rob Reiner, and it's a classic mockumentary about the rise and mainly lows of rock group Spinal Tap, and we follow their disastrous American tour and behind-the-scenes antics that give them notoriety throughout the years. And it's a great satire, because it's a satirical world, because it sends out the behaviour...
That's my way of saying it, because they're in a band.
Yeah, because they're in a band. It sends out the behaviour of all these rock groups from the 70s and early 80s. Mm-hmm. And actually, when Ozzy Osbourne first saw the film, he believed it to be a real documentary.
Yeah.
Because he said a lot of the stuff that happens in the film happened in real life, but obviously not identical. However, funnily enough, it's bands like Black Sabbath that the film sends up. So, for example, the Stonehenge scene. How much do we love that particular part of the film? And we see the set being too small for the stage. And with Black Sabbath's Born Again tour, the monument they used was too big. So they kind of flip-reversed it and did that instead, and it became incredibly funny. But it explores a rock star's attitude to such a loud volume. It pretty much takes the piss and results in comedy that is still effective today. Do you agree with that satirical response, Mark?
Lick my love pump. It's one of the funniest films I've ever seen.
It is.
I don't know if it qualified as satire, but because it was voted in there so high up.
Roted. Because it was roted.
Did I say voted?
You did.
Oh, sorry. Fucking hell. This is what we shouldn't record late or with me.
Oh, so
this is Spinal Tap for me is one of the best comedies I think ever made. One of the best British films. The cast are so good. Mm. The writing is brilliant, not ritted or something like that. And there's just so many good scenes. The going with the amps to 11 and all those scenes. Just, it's one of those films I'll watch once a year and I'll always love it. And it's just such a great soundtrack as
it
well.
It is. It also has one of the greatest character names of Artie Fufkin.
Artie Fufkin.
Artie Fufkin. Artie Fufkin.
It's one of those films where I will be just, apropos of nothing, I'll be walking down the street or I'll be at work or I'll be at a football game and one of the lines or scenes will come into my mind and I'll just start laughing to myself. The one that always gets me is when they're talking about how the support act before them was shit and he says, they were still booing them when we came on.
Just the delusional.
It's so good. That fucking delusional.
He died because he choked on vomit. It was actually proven not to be his own vomit.
Yeah. You can't dust for vomit.
You can't dust for vomit. Well, since my baby left me. No.
An amazing film.
So good.
I'm glad it qualifies. Yes, I've well got done. One in there out of three. Ben, are you actually going to give us a good satire film?
I am.
Yes, we can rely on him.
I'm going to give you Idiocracy.
Oh, yes. We did that as a rewatch.
We did indeed. It's Mike Judge's hilarious and worryingly accurate look at an everyday Joe who's put into suspended animation, wakes up 500 years in the future to a world in constant decline where corporations run everything and stupidity is celebrated. And it's painful to watch because it's supposed to be extreme and over the top, but you can't help but see the parallels with the real world we're in. For example, in the film, the president, played by the great Terry Crews, is a brash, arrogant, former professional wrestler who routinely says and does offensive shit to the delight of his dim-witted supporters. And hey, in real life, right now, the US president is a brash, arrogant, former reality TV star who routinely says and does offensive shit to the delight of his dim-witted supporters. So, you know, it hits a little too close to home for
Kinda.
Me. But there are so many great jokes within the film that demonstrate the decline of society. One of my favourites is how, in the present day, the very real restaurant chain, Fuddruckers, the name
Fuddruckers.
That is genuinely the real name.
It's amazing.
And then 500 years in the future, the name has become Buttfuckers.
That's incredible.
And that is perfectly acceptable to the pig shit thick citizens of this future society. Another good one is how the most famous TV show of the day is called Ow My Balls, and it's just a guy routinely getting kicked in the balls. Yes.
Can someone commission that? Because I would watch
if
that.
If it was on Netflix, I would watch it every week.
But the thing is, you know, how is that much different from the reality TV shit we have these
or
days?
Or Jackass.
Yes!
Even things like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, where you've got idiots, you know, running through bugs and snakes and shit. How's that any different to Ow My Balls?
And like
it's
eating
the same.
Crocodile dick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the fucking same. the film was badly distributed by the distributor Fox. They didn't see any value in it. They didn't promote it, and they barely put it out. The film only made $500,000 worldwide.
Not a lot.
That's not even the same as The Room.
I know. Wow. It's absolutely nothing. Thankfully, it's lived on through home video DVD, and it's become now rightly held as a cult success.
Yeah.
It's a very beloved film within a very small subsection of people. But we loved it when we reviewed
it. That was the first time I had ever seen it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you told me who it was written by, I was like, yep, I'm on board. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just laughed all the way through. But it was also scary. One of the most terrifying things. So it was, what's it, about 15 years old now, this film?
It was
too much on the money. It was like, fucking hell, this is so right now. Yeah. But it was good fun.
Even when people who don't spell correctly on TV or magazines or newspapers in the film, that is today. Like, mm-hmm. the amount of mistakes I see on websites is shocking.
Yeah.
And some of these so-called journalists pride themselves on it. You think, the fuck?
Yes.
Society's ruined, kids. It's ruined.
Yeah, we are in the dark timeline.
We are indeed.
What can we do to save them? Just keep releasing podcasts and talking shit.
And I can wrap it up too. So let's do that. My last choice. I don't know if both of you guys have heard this. I think one of you has, one of you hasn't. Mine is Series 7, The Contenders.
Brilliant film. Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Never
film.
Seen it.
So good.
I think you would really enjoy it. So it's directed by Daniel Minahan, and it's filmed as a reality TV show in the not-too-distant future where people are drafted at random, where the aim of the game is to kill or be killed in order to gain freedom. Now, I know what you're thinking. That sounds like The Hunger Games. Nope. This was done 7 years prior to The Hunger Games ever being written.
And it's not a kid's film either.
No. And the defending champion of the show, a heavily pregnant woman named Dawn, must kill the new participants, which includes her former ex-lover who's got cancer, Jeff.
Wow, yeah. That sold it to me.
I hope so. But it is a small indie film, and I love this as it came out because it was during the time, this film was done in 2001, and it was the time when reality TV shows were really kicking off and exploding mm-hmm. in pop culture. Mm-hmm. And you had shows like Big Brother in the UK, Survivor in the US, and The Real World on MTV. And I genuinely believe those shows were the inspiration behind this film. And the show kind of twists the prize into something much more disturbing, which is, in order to walk away from all of this, you have to kill everybody that you meet that's included in the game. And the attacks really are not an easy watch mm-hmm. because they're depicted as so realistic. And in particular, we see a teenage Merritt Weaver who's now subsequently gone on to win Emmy Awards, and she's in Netflix's Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. And she was only a teenager in this film. And her character, Lindsay, and an older man, Franklin, are in the throes of trying to eliminate each other at one point. And it culminates in the old guy basically battering the shit out of her while her parents are a few yards watching this happen. They're murdering their daughter. They can't do anything about it because it's all part of this game, this government-induced game. It's absolutely terrifying. But it satirizes all the TV station methods on trying to keep their ratings up by keeping the viewers tuned in. And what better way to do it than start killing some people? Mm-hmm. But it is so good. It's unheard of, but I think you would really enjoy it, Mark.
It's absolutely brilliant. I remember the first time I saw it, I'd never heard of the film, and I was just flicking through the channels one night, and it was on BBC Two at like 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it was just starting. I was like, I don't know what this is, but there's fuck all else to do, so I'll watch it. And I was gripped. Yeah. It absolutely hooked me. And the way I would put it is, it's basically Black Mirror 15 years before Black Mirror existed.
Nice.
It's that kind of thing. It feels like a Black Mirror episode. It's fucking brilliant.
I've not even heard of it.
So good.
I think I got it at DVD when I was at uni or something. Mm. I think I heard about it from a magazine or a website, and I was like, okay.
It sounds great.
It's brilliant. And I love found footage. I love kind of that reality-esque sort of films. Mm-hmm. And this was right in my street, and it is so good.
So we got mostly satire films on the topic. I fucked it up with
75%
a couple.
75% of it.
It's all right.
It's all right. Hey, I did try and justify Wally for you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Don't worry. Anytime, mate, anytime.
It was that or Mac and Me. Fuck it, we did all right. What did good old social media come up with?
I'll tell you right now. On Twitter, we had Anna Pink at Anna247 said, Monty Python's The Life of Brian.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I could have had that. This is all the stuff I could have had.
Yeah.
Is what you could have won. Second choice was Brazil.
Oh,
never seen that
film.
But isn't it
so
like
good.
2 days long?
It's quite long.
Yeah, 2.5 at max. And Network.
Yes, Network.
That's
excellent.
A great film.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Absolutely. George Hagen at George Hagen said, "This is Spinal Tap."
Yes.
Of course. The Interview. Now, do you remember the controversy that surrounded
that
film?
Oh, is that Seth Rogen?
Yeah.
Seth Rogen.
Never watched that.
It's all right. It's not.
It got banned, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, because of North Korea, because they were lampooning Kim Jong Un.
That's right. Mm. Yeah.
And turned out, wasn't so good. Also, Airplane.
Yeah.
Great film.
Paul R. Green at AKA Paolo Verdi said In the Loop.
Yep.
Also said Bob Roberts.
I've never seen that one. I think
what's
it's
that?
Is it Tim Robbins?
Yes, I believe so.
Bob
yeah.
Roberts.
Bob Roberts.
Mm. Yeah. Weird.
And Wag the Dog.
That's a good film.
Political satire. The Fourth Dimension at Mike_J_Lord said The Death of Stalin.
Very good film. Armando Iannucci. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Strangelove.
I was so close. That would have been my number, my number four.
I was really surprised.
On the website, Ben, can you change that for Wall-E so I don't like I knew what I was on about?
No, I cannot.
That's a great film.
Yeah. And also it said The Rise and Rise of Michael Rimmer. Now, I've not heard about this film.
Is that a porno?
Yeah. No fools here, lads. No fools here. And then over to Facebook, we have Sarah Jane Thomas said Starship Troopers.
Great.
Also said Best in Show. Yes.
Amazing film, yeah.
Amazing.
Another Christopher Guest film.
Mm-hmm. And also agreed with The Death of Stalin. We also had Stephen Ferns that said Series 7, The Contenders. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The Mouse That Roared.
Don't know it.
Never heard of that.
No, we'll pop it on the list. And also Bob Roberts. And then finally, Zach Ferguson said, Exit Through the Gift Shop. So
the Banksy
brilliant.
Film. Oh. I've never seen that.
Never seen it, because I couldn't give two shits about Banksy.
I don't like it.
Who is Banksy? Oh, who gives a fuck? Do you know
Banksy.
What I mean?
Wanksy.
He's a fucking domestic terrorist, if you ask me. Graffitiing everywhere.
Yeah, he's making a mess.
Respect the rule of law, you prick.
Yeah.
I really like
it. Just because you're talented, you're still making a mess.
Must try harder. Zach also said In the Loop. And finally, Team America, World Police. Fuck yeah.
Great film.
Thank you ever so much, guys. And as always, keep them coming in.
Whose topic choice is it next time round?
Oh, that would be me.
Oh, hello.
So as we know, we live in an age of the superhero movie. But a superhero is only ever as interesting as their nemesis. Which is why on the next episode, we're going to be discussing the top three movie supervillains.
Yes!
And for clarity, for the sake of this topic, neither the villain nor the hero they battle have to actually be superpowered. So, for example, if you wanted to have Heath Ledger's Joker, that is an acceptable response.
Okay,
they don't actually have to be super to be considered a supervillain.
Question.
Yes.
Can Wally qualify on this?
Of course he can.
And yeah.
Apparently he can qualify for everything.
And can Skittles in Mac and Me?
It's review time. Set several decades after The Shining, Dr. Sleep follows an adult Danny Torrance as he continues to deal with the trauma of the events all those years ago. After encountering a young girl with the same extraordinary gifts as him, he's forced to protect her and himself from a sinister group intent on using their powers for their own ends. The film stars Ewan McGregor as an adult Danny, Kylie Curran as a powerful young girl Abra, and Rebecca Ferguson as Rose the Hat, the head of the cult on their trail. Now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, Gemma, you're our resident Shining fanatic, so
hiya.
I need to bring this to you first. So,
okay.
Dr. Sleep or Dr. Put Me to Sleep?
This is bang average. What a bang average film. I'm sorry, there's nothing spectacular about it. I mean, I'm basing my opinions on watching the film only, so I have not read the book, and I'm sure the book is great. But I don't think anybody's going to put this to the legacy of what The Shining is. It's just ordinary. Really, really ordinary.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you.
Mark, Dr. Sleep or Coctor Sleep?
I enjoyed it more than the sounds of Gemma because I thought it was a good little story, had great balance, and I was quite satisfied. But then I was just judging it for the film we went to see. If you watched it back to back with The Shining, it doesn't compare. It's nowhere near worth that absolute classic that we love today, which is The Shining. I've not read the book either, but I came out just thinking, that was pretty good, and Ewan McGregor surprised me.
And we'll get into that, certainly. I thought it was very well-made horse shit.
Like a pedigree horse shit.
The story was absolute nonsense,
right.
But I did kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
I came out relatively satisfied. My biggest issue is that despite the ending being set in the Overlook Hotel, and we'll come to that later, the film didn't feel to me like it was part of the Shining universe at all. It felt to me more like a mashup of The Sixth Sense and The Lost Boys, especially with those gypsy fear vampires knocking about.
Yeah.
It felt like one of those incredibly watchable Corey Feldman straight to DVD Lost Boys sequels that Mark enjoys so well.
They are good.
It just didn't feel like it fit in that universe at all. Mm-hmm. Shall we start with Ewan McGregor?
Yeah.
You mentioned that he surprised you. Why did he surprise you?
I don't want to be too harsh on him because he is a good actor, but like we said on the last episode, I always see him as Renton in Trainspotting. When I see him in anything else like Big Fish or these other films, I never buy into it. Even in the Star Wars films, I'm never like convinced.
Yeah.
I think he just about looks like he's sleepwalking through a film.
Yeah.
In this, there we go. In this, I believed in him and I stopped thinking it was Ewan McGregor. I felt he gave a lot to the performance and he just looked like he cared. He looks like he was trying and I believed he could be an older version of the child we saw in the original so many years ago.
Do you know what? I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think he had the gravitas to ground the film at all. I think that I was getting a lot of just one note from him and not a whole landscape of emotions. I mean, maybe I was watching another film to everybody, but the connection with Danny to, you know, what the character is all about. And again, I'm trying very hard not to connect it directly to The Shining. And I thought it was quite sparse. I didn't feel the connection, unfortunately.
I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I genuinely find Ewan McGregor to be a very bland actor. So I was presently surprised that at the start of the film, he was really haunted and quite twitchy.
Yeah.
You know, he was dealing with the circumstances that he dealt with as a kid. He was dealing with his alcohol addiction. I really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he got sober, he was boring.
Yeah.
I really liked drunk Danny,
yes.
But sober Danny, boring as hell.
I mean, the moral of the story is...
be drunk.
Yeah.
Have booze.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a lot more fun
when
you're full of alcohol.
Alcohol is cool. Because all the cool kids do it.
Correct.
I think we should have a toast to that.
Okay. Yeah.
Scrumpy
chin, chin.
Jack.
Chin, chin.
Nice one.
There we go. Cheers.
Let's talk about Rebecca Ferguson. So for me, she was the best part of the film as Rose the Hat. And what I thought was really impressive is that she mostly underplayed the part. It would have been the kind of part that would have been very, very easy to camp up or to ham it up.
Yeah.
And I think she does a bit of that towards the end.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, she managed to underplay it. And I thought she was great.
I did like her. I thought it was good because when, especially at the start of the film, you know, as a kid, you would feel safe around beauty and kindness. Mm. But until that beauty and kindness turns out to be the rotten core of evil, I love that turn. And obviously, we now have our villain. The ending, which we'll come to later, I thought it was just pantomime villain. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for all the boos and hisses from the audience. And I think it was just a little bit too much for my liking. But she evoked so much power. I enjoyed her thoroughly.
She was the strongest thing in the whole film. And everyone always slags her off. If you read like a lot of
really?
Stuff on... Yeah, people never really give her the praise she deserves.
Like, I like her.
Yeah, I liked her.
Well,
this,
let's go and hunt these bad asses down
but she
give
seemed like a
to.
Genuine threat. She seemed quite harrowing. She seemed quite kind of just, she had this scare factor about it. It was like you said, it wasn't too over the top in the point of like being this whole demon. They didn't have these red eyes. It didn't need it. She just seemed like a sinister human being, which was a bit off-putting.
And she's got a great face. And I don't mean that she's pretty. She is pretty, obviously. But I mean, she's got a really interesting and compelling face.
Yeah.
I just like looking at her. I just like seeing her emote with that face. She's incredible.
You could see the gears working behind the eyes and what the next calculated move was going to be. I really enjoyed that too.
My one issue with her is the accent was inconsistent.
Oh, yeah. Where was it?
What accent was she doing? One minute she sounded American, the next minute she sounded English, then all of a sudden she was Irish.
Must be mates with John Coffey.
Because in real life, I think she's half English, half Swedish, but
right.
I don't know what accent she was trying to do here. No. She didn't nail it down.
It's like pick an accent, just one accent.
Just pick one and stick with it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Moving on from there then, what about the young girl, Kylie Curran?
She was fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved her.
I've not seen her in anything before.
Me neither.
And she's got a great future ahead of her, I think. She was really, really believable. I genuinely believe she had these powers about her. And she just had good chemistry with everyone that she was on screen with.
There was one scene I really enjoyed her in. It was when she was kidnapped by the crow.
Yeah.
And Danny decides to jump into her body
he, like,
to try,
possesses
and,
her.
Yeah, try and control the situation. And you genuinely believe that was Danny Torrance behind the eyes. And I loved her. It was almost like this sort of cockiness, this confidence, this maturity about her. And it wasn't just the way how she was delivering her lines. It was just the way how she held herself, that presence. Remarkable.
I agree. That was the best thing she did in the whole film because it shows that she clearly at a young age has range because when she was possessed by Danny, it did not seem like the same character she was playing 2 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
It was excellent work. And just a note on the production there, I loved how they gave her Danny's blue eyes when she was possessed.
Yes, I saw that.
It looked so weird, didn't it?
Yeah.
I dug that.
I thought a lot of the special effects looked really good. When they were like, it reminded me a bit of the Green Mile. So when they were kind of dead and dying, they had this kind of steam come out of their mouths, like when we saw John Coffey take the evil away.
Mm-hmm.
And this steam was evaporating from the body and stuff. And it wasn't done cheaply. Like sometimes with Stephen King adaptations, they just cut corners on CGI and never do it justice. But it looked like a decent budget horror film.
It did. And I think you've got to give a lot of praise to the people who are putting the sets together. So when you get to the Overlook Hotel at the end, the way they'd recreated
that
legendary film set, it was flawless, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
that's the moment when
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. But I did notice there's a lot of Easter eggs with The Shining references in it. So, for example, Abra's house was 1980. 1980 was when The Shining was released. And the AA guy's office, when he takes Danny into there, it was an exact replica of the office that's seen in The Shining when... bloody hell, Jack.
Yes.
When Jack has the interview for the caretaker of the Overlook, shot for shot, colour for colour, pictures were in the same place. I really dug that. I thought that was a really nice little touch. And then when they are in the Overlook Hotel, both Abra and Danny, they both have jackets that kind of, when you put them together, represents the outfit that Jack Torrance wears in The Shining. So Abra has a red puffer jacket. So she's got the colour red that Jack had for the jacket. And Danny has a checked shirt and almost the same kind of jacket that he wore, but a different colour. You put them two together, they are always meant to be in the Overlook Hotel.
I think they did great work trying to link it back to the original. As I say, thematically, or, you know, it just didn't have the same aura as the original. But I think they kind of hamstrung themselves, though. They tried too hard to link back. So I couldn't stand the Jack Nicholson cosplayer that turned up.
No, it's like when you put something in a microwave and it just melts.
Yeah, that was. And do you know who played the Jack Nicholson cosplayer?
Go on.
God.
It was the kid from E.T.
Is that who it is? Yeah.
Oh, he's in The Haunting of Hill House. Yeah. He's the dad.
Oh, there you go. It was him. And the other thing that I didn't like is when Danny is in the Overlook Hotel and he finds the door that his dad had previously smashed through the act and he sticks his face in the hole. Yeah. That's great. All of us know The Shining. All of us got the reference.
Yeah.
But they then showed a flashback scene to the act going through. It's like, credit us with some intelligence. We didn't need a flashback. We know what he's looking through.
We're not thick. Yeah. Mike Flanagan.
We had a few scenes like that where it's like, look, remember, this is The Shining.
Yeah.
It was very much paying fan service, I thought. But I did like when we finally get to the Overlook and the beginning of The Shining, when it goes across the lake and you've got that little island with trees. It was pretty much shot for shot of the beginning part of The Shining. And I like that. I dug that. And the score was very similar. It was sort of updated. And there's nothing quite like looking into an old hotel that you love so much and going into the gold room. Yeah, the living quarters of the Torrances, the boiler room, everything. It was special.
I liked the seeing the elevator scene again with all the blood coming out.
She didn't give a shit.
I love that. She just shrugged like, fuck it.
At that moment, I was imagining Gemma being in the cinema recreating that scene down in her pants.
Why would you imagine that? Why would it be
blood?
Oh, not blood. Just gush.
What are you trying to say?
Not blood.
He's not thought this through, Gemma.
No. So basically, you sat in Dr. Sleep imagining me having the biggest period of my life. Thanks, buddy.
Sponsored by
Tampax. There we go.
No,
or body form.
No, gush.
Body form for you.
Gush, not blood.
There we go. Moving swiftly on.
Something that I didn't think worked is there were amount of things that happened in the film that were just instantly forgotten.
Yeah.
So, for example, when. Why was Jacob Tremblay in this film, for one thing? Why hire the best child actor working and have him get murdered straight away? Why have him in a bit part?
That was really horrible.
That's bizarre to me. Oh, the scene where he dies, that was grotesque.
I don't think I've ever seen like a child murder in a film before. And that was just blood-curdling.
Yeah, it was nasty. But the thing that annoyed me is, so Danny and his mate, is it Bill, they then go out looking for the body and they find the body. And then we never hear anything more about it.
Yeah.
Did they go to the police? Did they tell the kids' parents? What did they take the body with them? We never find out again. Similarly, when Danny's mate Billy shoots himself in the head, we hear no more about it. Did he call the police? Did he inform his family? We don't know. These massive earth-shattering events happen and there's no follow-up.
That'll be in the next film.
Great. Look forward to that.
It's a good point, though. Yeah, because there's a whole build-up about finding that body. They're digging for ages. Yeah. The big conspiracy, if he's there, he's there. But if he isn't, we're going to have, oh my God, it's going to be even worse. And then they find it.
Yeah.
Dead.
They're like, okay.
Done.
And then they just fuck off. And the thing is, Danny would be the prime suspect for both of those murders because his DNA is all over the show.
Oh, yeah,
there's no follow-up. He's just back in his little hotel room kicking it.
Perhaps we get a director's cut coming out on Blu-ray only, special edition, which seems to be the big trend at the moment.
Nah, you're right, mate.
Maybe. One thing that I did like, I thought the sound, so not the score necessarily, I don't know if it's the sound editing or sound mixing, because I don't know the difference, but the sound on the soundtrack was incredible. There was always some kind of whooshing or whirring or clanking or banging, and it was really powerful, really crisp, really clear, and quite unnerving. It had you on the edge of your seat. I thought the sound was phenomenal.
Again, the inspiration from The Shining, because you had all throughout that heartbeat score. And that was used primarily when Jack goes into room 237 in The Shining. And I like that little bit, that the biggest scare out of the whole film, that was used throughout and just littered. I really enjoyed that. And you're right, the sound was exquisite. Mm-hmm. Really,
there is no room 237. Sometimes the complaints will be possible. I think you got mistaken, Ben. I think the fact was that we went to the Odeon this time, which is a decent cinema, which had speakers that worked.
Oh, that's
so
true.
The difference was, we're normally in The View where there's like a... speaker, and Ben was like, oh my God, we can actually hear sounds.
Yeah.
So we could go and watch any old fucking film next week and it'll still sound better.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I've had I've pretty much said all I need to say about this. Has anyone got anything else they'd like to add?
I am Doctor. Time for a nap.
I feel a bit sad for you, Gemma, because this was your moment. Like, this is when like Blade Runner 2049 came out for Ben.
Yeah.
Your favourite film of all time, and you get an extension.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for Mac and Me Too to have that feeling.
Yeah,
but
Mark, I did not get an extension. Aww. If you know what I mean.
Wow.
Is that like a knob joke?
Yeah, it was. Oh, okay. It was
just
an
a period.
Just
a heavy period. Last week's episode was period cast. We can't have it
was
again.
It?
Remember, there was a lot of period talk.
Oh, I seem to have forgotten about
Let's score this. Come
let's
on.
Let's do it.
For the love of Christ, let's score this. Gemma, what are you giving it?
Like I said, it was a bang average film. I don't think it's going to extend on the legacy of The Shining, so I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Okie doke. Mark?
I enjoyed it more than Gemma, so I'm going to go 7.
Oh, I'm with Gemma on this one. It's a 6 for me every day, and that gives it an overall skip to the end score of 6 out of 10.
It's competition time!
Wow. The build-up was excellent, but then you sounded like you were on helium at the end.
Yeah, wow.
I love the voice break.
If only I could have kept on going. Wow. That's what you expect now, but you get surprises all the time. But you know what that means. It's time for competition time, and we're going to announce the winners from our last episode, but also give away some amazing prizes to celebrate this episode. So on the last episode, we had a brand new set of the new Harry Potter Funkos, which are always very popular.
Ooh.
It's all 9 that come in a set delivered straight from Funko themselves. The question we put out there was, who wrote the books Harry Potter? Quite a big one, that.
J.K. Rowling.
It's true. And Hilary Dorset on email will be getting those in the post. Because we didn't really have anything to tie in with the episode, we struggled. I just said to Sully, what's a good range of Funko Pops? We can tie it in with It's Just Been Halloween, and they've given us a whole set of The Purge.
Lovely.
So that's great. A whole set of 5 different Funkos. We put out there, who directed The Purge movie?
James DeMonaco.
Lisa Bishton got that right, and she'll be getting those all in the post. One of your favourite directors, that, isn't it, Pooch?
Can't get enough of the demonicizer.
There we go. We also have the set of the brand new James Bond Funko Pops.
Oh, I thought you were going to say DeMonaco.
That would have been good. But everyone's asking for that.
Always.
But not yet. And what we said was, what is everyone's favourite Bond villain? And Jonathan Wright came along on email. And do you know what he said?
What?
What did he say?
Jaws.
Brilliant.
So it's going to win, isn't it? Always going to win. Yeah. On the last episode, we masturbated over Danny Boyle. That was a great, great session of discussion. And one of the films that he brought out was Sunshine, which is one of my favourite sci-fi films ever, I'd say.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome.
More than 2001.
Easily. And the question we put out there was, who directed the film Sunshine?
Well, that's tough.
It is.
In that you've just said the answer.
I know.
It's Danny Boyle.
It is. Eddie Hain will be getting that, who came through on Instagram.
Ooh.
Direct message on Instagram.
Houses.
And finally, they have a brand new design of the Winchester pub from the good old Shaun of the Dead, which is always good for us.
It is.
The question we put out there was, who plays Shaun in Shaun of the Dead?
That would be Simon Pegg.
It's true. And at Gritster, we'll be getting that in the post, who's Paul Stewart on Twitter.
Good.
Let's give away some new stuff. As we just discussed, the brand new film, which is the following from The Shining, we've got a brand new design from Last Exit to Nowhere. So let's keep it really simple. Who wrote the book The Shining? Really, really simple. Coming up on this episode, we're going to be having a rewatch of The Fight Club. Of The Fight Club. The Fight Club. And the question, that's the one. I'm going to put out a t-shirt from Last Exit to Nowhere, which has the soap company, which looks really smart.
Cool.
So let's say, who wrote the book Fight Club?
I can't wait for you to pronounce that name.
Christ, chuck someone. But the next one is that we have a Jack Torrance pop from Funko, which is great. Let's say who plays Jack Torrance in the original Shining, not in the new one.
No, fucking shite.
Yeah.
Because it's just been Halloween, they've given us some really nice Pet Sematary Funko Pops, which ties in nicely with Stephen King.
Sexy.
It's like dead dogs.
what are the pops? A literal dead dog.
It is genuinely, you get the boy.
Yeah.
I think it's called, I've got his name is now.
And but it's a question.
The little, what's the boy called? And his dead cat. You can win one of those Funko Pops. Gemma, you'll like this a lot. Just released a brand new set of Get Out Funko Pops.
Yes!
Let's keep it really simple. To win one of those, who directed the film Get Out? And finally, they've just released a full range. These are really popular, of Scary Stories Funko Pops. I'm not into that. It's this big horror thing over there. Let's say, to keep it really simple, what is everyone's favourite scary movie?
Ooh.
Oh.
Should we come back in 2 weeks and announce all the winners?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's do that.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, this section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we talk about our favourite film from that particular person. So on the last episode, we picked out Darren Aronofsky, extraordinary visionary director who's done a film here and done another film there and a few others in between. But besides that, we need to be talking about our favourite film from that particular chap. So, Mark, Darren Aronofsky me, now.
The Wrestler.
I've got it too.
What a great film.
Incredible.
From start to finish, I think probably Mickey Rourke's finest ever performance.
Oh, yeah.
The way it's filmed for me looked like a real sort of documentary, the way the camera action is. It felt raw. Randy the Ram Robinson returning to wrestling after this struggle. We see him with drugs. We see his mental health. We see how he deals with everyday life, how his life is crumbling in his hands. And I fucking felt emotional from this film. I felt it was real. And at no point did I remember that that's Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
I really did hit me hard. This film is outstanding. Have we done it as a rewatch?
I feel like we have. Yeah. Yes.
Everything about it's great. Ben will talk a lot more about the wrestling, but the fact is that when people normally put wrestling in films, it looks ridiculous. The fact that they had real wrestlers on site, they had these choreography scenes that looked really, really strong. I believed he was a wrestler, and that's credit to him and the director.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the greatest credit you can give to the film is that it resonated with everyone, regardless of whether you like or care about wrestling, because the struggles of Randy the Ram Robinson are universal and transcend his sport of choice. He could just have easily been a broken down football player or a washed up actor, and the story would have worked just as well. But for those of us who are familiar with wrestling, who do love wrestling, there's an additional layer of poignancy, because if you're familiar with, say, for example, the life of Jake the Snake Roberts, you can't help but see parallels in what Randy the Ram is going through. You know, if you've seen the wonderful documentary Beyond the Mat,
so good,
brilliant.
But the film, as Mark has alluded to there, wouldn't work at all without the incredible performance of Mickey Rourke as Randy. He genuinely looks like an old wrestler.
He does, yeah.
It's not just the 80s rocker hair, but it's the beaten, bruised and broken body and a face that shows the wear and tear of a life lived. And Rourke was the perfect guy for this because he used to be an ex-boxer. So he knows a bit about combat sports. He's done a bit of physicality. But also because he was a hard partier in his youth. He had his issues with drink and drugs and he looks battered. He looks worn down. He looks like one of these road warriors, these wrestlers who do it for 30, 40 years playing in front of 200 people in armories and bingo halls. Yeah. He looks like
the guy who
has lived that life. And Aronofsky did great work by drawing out of him the best and most moving performance of his career. I thought it was incredible. And one of the things I love about this film is seeing how real wrestlers responded to it. Some people, like Jim Cornette, hated it, which isn't surprising because Jim Cornette hates everything that he sees as exposing the business. But many of the wrestlers loved it. And apparently, when Rowdy Roddy Piper saw it, he found it so powerful and realistic that it moved him to tears.
Aww.
And if it's good enough for Hot Rod,
absolutely,
it's good enough for me.
I miss that dude.
Me too.
It's a great film, it really
Incredible.
Is. And what I like about it, like you said as well, is that people I know that don't give a shit about wrestling just say, what a fucking great film that was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Still one of my favourite scenes where he's wearing the hair net behind a sort of delicatessen counter cutting meat. And just the way he is and the way he's shouting to customers, he'll never let that kind of character go. I fucking love this film.
Oh, I'm going to watch it tonight.
I know, it's so good.
I just need to watch it now.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's so good.
Oh, man.
So sad at the end.
I thought you might be on the same page. I thought we'd all have it.
It would, but this film's just eked it out a little bit, purely because I love that. I love the story of the wrestler, but I'm blown away by this particular film in terms of it as a whole film of editing, sound, etc. So I don't know if this will come as a surprise, but my pick is Requiem for a Dream.
Nice.
It stars Jared Leto, Jennifer Connelly, Marlon Wayans, and the wonderful Ellen Burstyn, who steals it all. And I spoke about this film not long ago with Marlon Wayans' performance and how good it was and how he's usually a little bit rubbish. So I'm going to talk about the reason why I like this film as opposed to the story. So the editing techniques of this film is so fast and out of control one minute, and then it's slow and dreamlike the next. And it perfectly reflects the disorientation of the grips of drugs, both illegal and pharmaceutical. The score by Clint Mansell it's so prophetic of the fates of these characters, and it dominates the misfortune that each of them ultimately suffer. And it's not just the music, but it's also the sound editing too. It's worth mentioning, you know, loud and painful noises that are used to sort of pierce the viewer. For example, Sarah Goldfarb, who is played by Ellen Burstyn, during her electric shock therapy scenes.
Oh, brutal.
It's horrifying. And as she's getting the shocks, this kind of shrill buzz sounds, and it makes you feel on edge, and it makes you feel each volt that pulsates through her head. And I liken this film kind of like a symphony. So there's so many elements that contribute to this film being so emotionally powerful and packed, and it makes you feel a whole range of emotions. You know, you feel disgusted, you feel heartbroken, you feel fearful, and yet there's only small glimmers of hope that exist throughout this whole story. It's not a cheery film at all, and it just highlights the harsh reality of addiction. It's not glossy, it's not romanticised in any way that you would normally associate with a Hollywood film, but Darren Aronofsky really orchestrated this whole film to be this crescendo, and it really is worth watching. It's so powerful.
It's so goddamn bleak.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Good God.
I've seen it once, and I have no desire to ever watch it again. It's too much. I'm like, fuck that.
It is. I rewatched this for the episode, and yeah.
Stays with you.
Man, I needed to listen to like some S Club 7 just to perk me up.
Just stick The Office on.
Oh, trust me, I've watched far too much Office.
There's no such thing as too much Office.
Never. Wow. I know. Even talking about it makes me feel bleak because I just remember the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's haunting.
Very different as well to the other stuff he's done.
That's true.
And I think that's why I picked this film, because The Wrestler is probably the best story out of all of the work that he's previously done. But this film, in terms of just the all-rounder, it's a film that I could just praise and praise and praise, even though it is the most depressing story ever written. But it is. Everything about this is remarkable.
I want to know what other films he's done, because there's quite a range out there. How could we do that on the moment?
How? Wait a minute. Ben's here.
With what? Social media?
No, get out of town.
Let's do this.
Yes.
On Twitter, Nick H at Heisenberg Pod has said Requiem for a Dream was great, but Nick also echoes our beliefs here. He said, I would never watch it again.
No.
It is great, but it is hard to watch. Mm. Also on Twitter, Stephen Adams at Stephen Adams 2 has said Pie is still my personal favourite.
I've never seen it either. I've seen a lot of Pie, but not the film.
There's no cherries involved in this one.
On Facebook, Josh Griffin has said, for me, it's got to be The Fountain. The visuals, performances, and that fucking score, perfection.
I've seen the cover on DVD, and it looked really good. It came out like with those sort of like Crouching Tiger films. It's his sort of version. And it looks so colourful and really like it's a demo disc for Stevie's, but I just had no desire.
It's a bit dull, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I've never seen it, but the reviews were terrible. Oh. It got absolutely slated. But, you know, Josh enjoys it. On Twitter, Johnny Edwards at Skip to the Ed.
Brilliant. Oh, you'll hear from our lawyers.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great name. He's gone for The Wrestler. He says, as a wrestling fan, I thought it was extremely well shot, unbelievable casting, and had real heart.
Indeed.
I agree entirely. On Instagram, DornazChagini9 is sitting on the fence. They've said The Fountain and Requiem for a Dream. He's a crazy genius.
Who? The guy who gave us the social media, or Darren Aronofsky?
Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah. Okay.
And then finally on Facebook, Erica Bean said Black Swan. It's a gothic masterpiece.
It is great.
I agree. I love
so
that
Natalie
film.
Portman in that is outstanding.
And
what
Mila Kunis.
Film.
Mila Kunis is incredible as well.
Yeah, don't be sleeping on Kunis.
Yeah, man. Oh, superb
man. I'd
film.
Love to sleep on her, but yeah.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Every single damn time.
The Wrestler pissed it.
Yeah.
Nothing else came close. In distant joint second were Black Swan and Requiem for a Dream.
All right.
Surprisingly, quite a few votes for The Fountain. As I said, I haven't seen it myself, so I can't judge, but it seems to be more popular than I thought. No votes at all for Mother.
Oh, good.
Now,
I hate it.
Yes, I know. You gave that as your worst film of the year a year or two ago.
Normally,
you
could never hate a mother.
How could I hate
a woman? But no, it's one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life.
And the thing is, I love it. I think it's absolutely incredible. It blew me away.
But can you see why I hate it?
Yeah.
Nothing happens for about an hour and a half.
It's
bleak.
No, it's an allegorical film. There's no real story, so I get why you
wouldn't
like it.
I needed you to explain what that meant. But it's not good. But I think the acting performances were good. But all I ever had was Jennifer Lawrence walking around like stressed. I was like, it's like a dog being left in a car that's getting too warm. She was agitated and looking around every 5 minutes, waiting for someone to break the window. And I just wanted to fucking.
Can you blame her though? Look what happened at the end.
Yeah, that was pretty bleak.
Fucking
if you want
hell.
Bleak,
fucked up.
Right.
Massively fucked up.
Wasn't the director fucking her as well?
He was with her for
time,
a while.
At the time, but no longer.
It's degrading.
She's a happily married woman.
True.
Congratulations.
And unsurprisingly, there were no votes at all for Noah, because why the fuck would you?
Noah? No.
dickheads.
Brilliant. Nailed it.
Can we masturbate again?
Of course we can.
Is it my turn to pick?
It certainly is. Do you want a drum roll?
Yes, please.
Let's do it.
And on the next episode, we're going to be masturbating over, oh baby, David Lynch.
Whoa!
Fucking hell.
Whoa. The first rule of this rewatch is to not talk about Fight Club.
Good night!
So we're done. Burn score. It's now time for us to talk about the one, the only Fight Club. I was actually quite surprised when I announced it that Ben didn't have a go at me and say, you fucking idiot, we did that on episode 37. Because the fact we've done 131 episodes and not talked about this is mind-blowing.
I cannot believe that we haven't done it. It's insane.
And it's definitely not a fuck-up by me. I went on the website and looked. Yeah. I don't know.
What website's that?
Skip to the end, .co.uk.
That's the one.
And if I can't get on that, I go on ineed5.co.uk. Because skip to the end isn't working, so I'll listen to a wrestling podcast. The film is about a depressed man played by Edward Norton who suffers from insomnia and meets a strange soap salesman named Tyler Durden, played by the one, I'm going to keep saying it, the only, Brad Pitt, who soon finds himself living in the same house after his own apartment is destroyed. The two bored men form a underground club which has very strict rules and fight other men who are fed up with their mundane lives.
Yes!
This perfect partnership does fray when Marla, a fellow support group crasher, attracts Tyler's attention.
Who's that played by?
Thanks, IMDb. It's Helena Bonham Carter.
The only.
This rewatch will contain spoilers, mm-hmm. but I do genuinely believe that everyone that's ever listened to Skip the End would have seen this film. Ben, talk to me about Fight Club.
It's fucking flawless.
Yeah!
It's a unique and fascinating story. It has magnificent acting, brilliant direction. It is incredible.
Gemma?
It's no Tyler Durden.
Don't ruin it. Fucking hell. Ben just nailed that. And you're fucking hell.
I'm not Ben.
Turn her mic off.
This film packs a punch. It's a hit with me. And the fact that people have been talking about this film for 20 years and it's still groundbreaking, it's still something that isn't seen to this day, it is so fucking great.
Lovely. I agree with you all. I think it's superb. Truly one of the greatest films of all time.
Yep.
And it's probably the closest film that's knocking on my top five now. I really do. I think it's at number six, just going, come on, gremlins, out you come. My turn to jump in. It was so nice to revisit this film. It must have been a few years, even though I'm praising it and we all love it. It's probably been a couple of years that I've seen it.
Ditto. Yeah.
I remember getting it first when I worked in Virgin Megastore, and it was the first DVD that had two discs and audio commentary by Radiohead and all this stuff. And I remember sticking it in my DVD player and I was just fucking blown away. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't change 20 years later. But Ben, let's break this down. Why is Fight Club so fucking great?
How much time have you got?
2 hours. Let's do this as a 3-hour podcast.
Let's talk about the twist. It has one of the all-time legendary movie twists, and I'll admit I didn't see it coming.
No. Never.
And I think anyone who claims to is a lying
twat. I was
twat.
In the cinema, and I could work out that actually Brad Pitt was not him.
Excuse me,
I picked up on all the clues.
The thing is, there are ample clues. If you watch the film again, knowing what the twist is, there are so many hints throughout it that give away the twist, but they're so well done that they seem perfectly innocent on first viewing. It's only on second viewing that you see the deeper meaning. A couple of examples of that is, for example, when the narrator is played by Ed Norton, when he's beating himself up in the boss's office, he says it reminds him of his first fight with Tyler. Because, of course, it would have been. His first fight with Tyler, he was beating himself up.
Nice.
Or there's another bit at the hospital where he says, Tyler speaks for me. And then Tyler says something and he repeats it. Of course he speaks for him. He is him.
Oh, I noticed towards at the beginning of the film when he's got a gun in his mouth and he talks about how there's going to be loads of explosives in a building and he says, I know this because Tyler knows this.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, what the fuck?
It's all those little things that only on second, third, fourth, 500th viewing you notice. But first time round, they're so innocent and so subtle, it doesn't give the game away.
Yeah. It was definitely one of the ones. I know at the time we had stuff like Sixth Sense, which gave us one of the best. Mm. But this is up there. It gave me such a punch in the stomach. And then I was just like, oh, but you don't have enough time to digest because there's only got a few minutes left of the film at that point. And you're like, fucking hell.
Mm-hmm. And the narrator acknowledges this because as soon as it's revealed that he is Tyler Durden, he says, please sit back onto your seats, like a sort of like an emergency airplane. Mm-hmm. And I love that because as soon as that was dropped, you know for a fact people would have gone, what?
I think we should talk a bit more about Tyler himself. So Brad Pitt, for me, we love him. He's had a great year. Okay, we might not love Ad Astra, but it's one of the biggest films of the year. Mm. He's there. We've seen him with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's back.
Amazing. Yeah.
He's showing us why he's one of the best. For a few years, he was doing a lot of shit like Mr. and Mrs. Smith and all these wanky films. This, for me, is his finest performance. He is Tyler Durden. He's the coolest motherfucker to wear a red leather jacket. Those glasses, his hair, his body. Let's be honest. He's just... let's be honest.
He's ripped.
He looks fucking outstanding.
He is cut.
Yeah, can I just say, are you looking for a date with him?
Yes. No.
Or would Ryan, what would Ryan Gosling think of that? I know. Jealous.
Don't cheat on
Sandwich
Gosling.
Me in the middle. But he's fucking great, isn't he?
He's incredible. And I love the look in his eyes when he turns to the narrator and says, I want you to punch me as hard as you can. There's this wildness in his eyes. It's just brilliant. He hooks you from that very first moment. It was his coolest on-screen performance. I would say maybe, I think, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has just slightly eked it for me
it's
as his coolest.
Close, isn't it?
But they're both great. We don't need to compete.
No.
They're both amazing. But he's absolutely phenomenal. And his partnership throughout the film with Edward Norton is flawless.
Yes, and commenting on the partnership, it's like they both represent the yin and yang of what ultimately is Edward Norton's full, complete character. But Brad Pitt plays this anti-hero in such an extremity that is so mesmerizing to watch. I mean, he's the figurehead of anti-capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to watch the world burn all in the name of mischief and mayhem. And it all begins with one punch.
Yeah.
That's how you start a revolution, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, those scenes where he takes his top of the everyone's rule, I'm fighting tonight. If you're here, it's your first time, you fight.
You have to fight.
It's brutal. The way they're punching and those things, it reminds me a bit of like Snatch and Lockstock because he does a good fight scene. Let's be honest about it. Fincher can do a good fight scene.
Fincher?
Those punches and the impact of those faces being smashed to pieces is grim.
It is, and that brings me to Edward Norton. So I think Norton was incredible in this, and it's a shame that he's not really as big a name as he used to be, because he's a terrific actor. Think about at this time, he was doing American History X as well, and again, it demonstrates how good his range is. How different is Derek in American History X compared to this? It's huge. But going on to the fight scenes, I love the scene where he smashes Jared Leto's face.
You love this?
Not just because Jared Leto frustrates me, even though he's incredible in Blade Runner 2049. I will give him his props there. But the way he's just smashing his face into quivering meat, and then everyone is staring at him in shock, because that's against one of the rules. If you go limp, you stop.
Yeah,
that's one of the cardinal rules, isn't it? But he's still going. got a bit rapey all of a sudden.
If you get limp, are you going to carry on?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Are we still talking about fighting?
Can I return to my point, please?
Sorry.
So he's smashing him in the face and he's gone too far and everyone's looking at him like, what are you doing? And then he just goes, he just kind of shrugs and walks off.
Yeah.
He doesn't acknowledge the fact that he's broken the rules that he created. Mm-hmm. It's just the mildest of shrugs and he fucks off out the room.
Oh, yeah.
It's a brilliant, tiny little moment from Norton that just nails the character.
He's quite scrawny as well, isn't he? When you look at the other people in that fight club, that most of them are quite muscly or businessmen, his body's quite pale as well. He's nothing like Brad Pitt. So you see him as this kind of, what the fuck? But he's the most powerful.
And that's exactly why Brad Pitt is the way he is. Like, the narrator or Norton, everything that Brad Pitt conveys himself to be with Tyler Durden, that's who he wants to be. He wants the body, he wants the looks, he wants the charisma, he wants the coolness. And then when you mirror it to what he actually is, he's just this little weasel that hangs out in these groups where, you know, like, people are genuinely dying. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way he gets his kicks and how he can sleep at night. That is fucked up.
And what they did intentionally throughout the film, Pitt and Norton, is Norton essentially starved himself throughout the creation of the film. So he gets thinner and more gaunt and more sickly looking as the film goes on. Whereas what Brad Pitt did, he was working out more, he was getting tanned. So by the end of the film, he looks as good as better than he looked at the start. Whereas Norton looks significantly worse. And that was an intentional thing the two of them decided upon, which is a great, great work.
That is so evident when he beats himself up in front of his boss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a point where he's kind of like struggling to breathe or he's trying to get himself up and he looks like a corpse.
Yeah.
It's really unsettling. I think that's one of the most unsettling scenes of the film where he just kind of, I don't know, it's almost like he's losing complete control, because with Tyler, I mean, he even says this towards the end, he is everything that he is not. He's free. He can be whatever he wants to be. And that is the closest in terms of a physicality that Edward Norton's character can be. And again, he doesn't have a name, hence the narrator.
Scary. But then we see, obviously, this world all go tits up when we see Marla introduced.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a massive fan of her as an actress. I'll be honest, because all we've seen her do recently is Disney stuff and stuff with her husband at the time. And we see Tim Burton putting her in everything as this over-the-top, like fucking Johnny Wanko himself.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
It is true. I mean, they've ruined these characters. But back then, this performance from her is outstanding.
It's brilliant, especially because at the time, she was known for costume dramas, period dramas, and Shakespearean adaptations. Mm-hmm. So putting her in something like this, where she's this grungy, dirty woman, it was completely out of character for her, which is why I think it works so well. I think she's absolutely nailed it.
Again, she kind of forms this anti-heroine kind of look, because she even states that she is in dire poverty. So it's okay for her to take food from dead patients. That's absolutely fine. But at the same time, she's like the antithesis of who the narrator is. You know, she gets sort of a kick out of visiting these self-help groups by making herself feel alive. And again, I kind of like that, because, you know, female characters shouldn't be sympathetic. They shouldn't be like, you know, the crux of somebody, you know, like the good part of that person. Fuck it, she's a mess, but she doesn't give a shit.
She's raw, she's real.
She's happy with that.
I love the scene between her and the narrator when they're trying to divvy up who gets which.
You
get parasites. Oh no, you've already got cancer. I want cancer.
I want bowel cancer.
So fucking, she's got like a sort of, she reminds me of someone like Courtney Love. In the day, she's got that rock chick sort of heroin addict, that skin, that body. It's a horrible shell of a person.
I liken her to like a fairy with broken wings.
Yeah.
Like there's that damagedness to it.
Is that like a My Chemical Romance?
No.
It should be.
Is that what they sing about?
They probably would. That's their new album.
Come on. I listen to K-pop. What am I talking about? But I love the fact that she is like this little broken doll. And I think the perfect image of that is when she comes downstairs from a night of knocking boots with old Brad Pitters.
At it.
The noise.
Dirt. A beast with two backs.
You had to just sit there listening to him.
They were literally like sledgehammering against the wall. Right. Like, you must have been pounding us since next Tuesday.
Jesus, Jam. People pay for this sort of talk.
Sunday night.
Oh. Call Gemma for 69p a minute.
But when she comes down, she's in that kind of weird, grotty kind of bridesmaid dress. And that's what I mean. You know, there's such delicateness to her. But at the same time, she's so damaged and she's so messed up. I love that look about her. She's like this fragile pixie that...
I love
her. She's incredible. And it's very apt that you mentioned Courtney Love there, Mark, because Courtney Love was actually linked to the role at one point.
Fucking hell.
Courtney Love and Winona Ryder were the two who were kind of the front runners before it eventually went to Helena Bonham Carter. Some of the names that are really interesting that were linked to the film. Initially, it wasn't going to be Fincher that directed it. It was going to be Peter Jackson.
What?
Jesus Christ.
But he was too busy filming The Frighteners at the time, so he had to turn it down. Crikey. Danny Boyle also turned it down.
Good.
Russell Crowe was approached to play Tyler Durden, but the studio preferred Pitt.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That would be such a different film.
Mm-hmm.
He'd just be like eating chicken legs all the time. And like meat grease all over his face. I don't know why. I just have that image of him.
The directing itself, though, is beautiful. The cinematography, the pacing, the editing. Some of the editing in that, remember, we take it for granted now when we see stuff like people like... Fucking let's think of someone like...
Brilliant. I'm trying to think of... have a point in your mind before you open your mouth.
He was already...
Edgar Wright is one of the best editors out there right now.
Yeah. Yes.
20 years ago, he wasn't on the scene like this.
Mm.
Then, those shots going through the house, going underground, all the shots in between the buildings, is done so well.
That IKEA scene.
Oh my God.
When it's literally like you're looking at a catalogue and then it's just peppering all this furniture in his condo. It's wonderful.
There are some incredible shots in the film. I think my favourite is when Tyler is giving the "you are the all singing and dancing crap of the world" speech. He's giving it direct to the camera, and the screen, as he's talking, the camera starts to violently shake.
That's when he's in the cinema room, right?
And then you see the edges of the film print on the side of the screen. That's fucking brilliant.
It's like he's on fire.
Yeah.
Like it's so literally good. Boring into your soul. This isn't a speech just to a camera. This is directly to you, and that's how much of an anti-hero he is.
I'll tell you what else do I like.
Go on.
Meatloaf. Give me his credit.
His name is Robert Paulson.
Yeah. So good.
Old bitch tits.
But he's good.
He's brilliant.
If you told me at the start of that film, Meatloaf's in it, I'd be like, for fuck's sake, what are you doing? But you forget, because his hair's cut, he's got his big tits. It's ridiculous.
And I like how he speaks in a very high accent, because he's had his knackers cut off, hasn't he? So he's at it. Hey, how you doing? Sounds like Michael Jackson.
Well, he'd do it anything for love, but he won't do that.
He won't get his knackers cut off.
No.
That's what it was the whole time.
The whole time. We finally know.
It's all about bollocks.
Solved it.
Brilliant.
But he is great.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really genuinely sad when you find out that he's shot dead, all in the name of Project Mayhem.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the first moments you realise that they are out of control.
They've gone too far.
And he's literally got no control over it at that point. Because even when he's trying to talk to them, they're like, we will not talk about Project Mayhem. And he's like, no, just fucking talk. Like, break character, talk to me. Yeah.
And they'll say to him, you know, he'll ask a question, he'll say, ah, you said you were going to ask that.
We
can't answer it, you told us not to.
You know? You said exactly that.
It's brilliant, because that is when Norton is at his best in the film. It's when he starts to become unglued, when he starts to get an inkling that things aren't as they seem, and when he finds out that he is Tyler Durden, that's when Norton's at his best. He's fucking incredible in the final act.
I kind of love Project Mayhem in a way. It's kind of like if Impractical Jokers, if they had like a breakdown and they decided to feed like birds like diarrhea tablets and shit all over a car dealership.
You're talking shit.
That happens in a film.
Why would that happen from those nice people that normally just go into a restaurant and order the wrong dish?
Exactly. That is Project Mayhem.
That's elevated onto another level.
But it's all about mischief. And when it starts going too far, that's obviously when the explosives start coming
in. That's horrendous.
And then to talk about another brilliant shot, that shot when the narrator and Marla are stood at the top of the skyscraper and you just watch all the buildings collapse.
Pixies comes on.
Yeah, Where is my mind?
What a moment. That's one of the best endings in cinema. It is.
It's superb. And that brings us nicely onto the soundtrack. Pixies, Where Is My Mind? You've got Tom Waits going out west. Yeah. So many
Radiohead.
Tunes.
And the score's done by the Dust Brothers.
Wow.
And it's brilliant as well,
it's
isn't
awesome.
It? That opening scene where you see you're going through the kind of synapses of someone's brain as the names are coming up on screen, and there's that kind of pounding Dust Brothers beat.
And notice about 2 seconds, it sounds like sort of normal, easy listening music. Then it kicks into that beat. It is so well done because it completely puts you off the swerve, and it's a great reminder of exactly what you're expected to see.
Brilliant.
The film sounds incredible. The writing as well. It's a great script. And weirdly, the scriptwriter, Jim Ewells, has only written one other full-length film. And it was the atrocious Hayden Christensen vehicle Jumper.
Whoops.
What the fuck?
You wouldn't think those two films were written by the same dude.
I think he should have retired after Fight Club.
He basically has.
Yeah.
But not by choice, though, I think.
No. Yeah.
Have you read the third book now? I know they've done the graphic novel of Fight Club 2, and I've just seen they've done the third one.
So I read Fight Club 2, and I'm pretty sure I brought it as a skip to the record years ago.
Yeah.
It's batshit crazy, and I have not yet read the third. No.
Cool. I'm interested to see where it goes now. Right, let's wrap this up. This has been a good one.
It has been
really good.
One.
I started with Ben, so Ben, what's your score?
It's 10, dude.
Yes! Gemma.
10!
10 all day fucking long. So overall, Fight Club gets a skip to the end. 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
Whose rewatch choice is it next?
It's mine. Laugh and the world laughs with you. Weep and you weep alone. On the next rewatch, we'll be watching the original Old Boy.
Yes! It's time for a brand new game show.
Woo-hoo!
Yes! And when I say brand new, I mean recycled.
Yeah!
It's kind of brand new.
It's not new at all. So you'll remember, I'm sure, dear listener, that a few episodes ago, we did a game show called Alphabets.
Oh, that was great. I love that.
So good.
And what that involved was us guessing each other's favourite film, beginning with every letter of the alphabet.
Oh, I remember now.
So we're going to do the exact same thing because I'm lazy.
Okay.
And it's easy. But this time, instead of picking each other's favourite film beginning with that letter, we're going to pick each other's least favourite film.
Shut the front door.
Beginning with that letter.
Genius.
Now, I'll be honest, this is harder.
Yes.
Gemma and Mark are pretending like they didn't know, but obviously
they had to prepare, so they didn't know.
And it's much, much harder. So it's not going to be the high-scoring affair that the last game was. Okay. It's going to be a lot cagier. One of us is going to win like 2-0.
I think it will be, genuinely.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
I don't know who's going to win, though.
I think I'm not going to win because I'm generally more vocal with shit that I hate. So I think you're more likely to get mine than I am yours.
I'm going to call it. I think Mark's going to win it all.
Mm, quite possibly.
I don't want to be put under the pressure of like that. Is it a 3 or is it a 1-er?
It's a 3-er.
Yeah.
So 26 letters in the alphabet, of course. We've had to split them down. We're doing the first 9 letters A to I this week.
Okay.
Next episode will be the next 9 letters, and the final episode will be the final 8 letters. And this is how it works. We go around saying what we think the other person's choice will be for that letter. If you get it right, you get a point.
Yay. Oh, easy.
But there is a little twist on it.
Well, what?
Let's say I ask Mark, what's your least favourite film beginning with A?
Yeah.
And Mark says, I don't know, Aliens. Now, of course, he wouldn't say that. It's a tremendous film. But let's say Mark says it's Aliens. But both Gemma and I say it's The Abyss.
Yeah.
Even though we've got it wrong, technically, because we both had the same wrong answer, we therefore know you better than you know yourself.
Oh, know yourself, fool!
Know yourself, bitch!
Bitch.
So if the other two get something different to what you have, they know you better than you know yourself, so they get the points anyway.
I forgot
anyway.
About that little twist.
So you can get points even if you're wrong.
I kind of wish there was extra points for trash talk.
Maybe there will be. Maybe I'll throw it in as we go along.
Come the sod on.
And it's going to be a cumulative game, so we're not going to announce a winner after the end of today. It will be at the end of the third show once we've done all 26 letters.
Okay. Wow.
And now the first time round that we did this, it was called Alphabets.
It was?
This time round it's called Alphabets 2, Electric Boogaloo.
That just rolls off the tongue.
I want that tattooed.
I love that.
So are we ready to begin?
Totally.
I've forgotten how we do this. So we'll go around in a circle.
We'll figure it as we go. So the letter A.
Right.
A. Mark, what do you think I have for my least favourite film beginning with the letter A?
I think you've gone with the biggest fucking blockbuster for many years, Avatar.
Ooh.
Oh.
Gemma, what have you gone with?
I've gone for The Avengers.
Oh, now I assume you mean the Uma
Thurman
one. I
do indeed.
You are both wrong. I went with American Sniper.
Oh! That is a dog shit film.
It's I can't even argue.
Propaganda bullshit.
Indeed. No to American Sniper.
Right then, guys. So, what I didn't like about Ben's introduction is he didn't use the phonetic alphabet.
Oh, you bloody love the phonetics. You're all about the phonetics.
So A for alpha, what do you guys think I went for my choice?
Okay, now I've kind of gone with a bit of a theme. I too have chosen you for the Avengers.
Mm. I too went with 1998's The Avengers.
Ooh.
Arachnophobia.
What?
I thought it was the biggest pile of shit.
I'm sure a couple of weeks ago you were talking about how much you loved it.
Yeah, you're like, oh my God, spiders
Why
are the
new
sharks.
Why are you arguing? You both got
we
a
get
point.
The points though, yeah, so you can eat shit.
Fuck. Yeah. That was an awful rewatch. Fucking hell,
ben,
back in the day.
He bloody loves spiders. Can't get enough of them. Can't get enough of them. Okay, so we are on A, and it's my turn. What do you guys think I went for?
Now, I'm pissing in the wind here, Gemma.
It's fine.
As someone I know loves Alien and Aliens, I've gone with Alien 3.
Oh.
That is dog shit.
It is dog shit.
I think you have seen it, and you're going to be on the Avatar.
You're both wrong. Oh. I've gone for Ali G in Da House.
That is terrible.
Because
yeah, that is pretty bad.
I mean, and it begins with A. It is an abortion of a film.
It is whank.
That is very good.
After one letter, the score's on the doors. Gemma and I have 1 point each. Mark has nada.
And there's no skill because you both said something I actually probably like.
Okay, we're on to the letter B. Mark, what have I got for the letter B?
This was a tough one. I had to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he went with Blair Witch Project.
Interesting. Ooh. Gemma.
I have gone for Battlefield Earth.
Marky Mark is correct.
Oh, yes.
It is indeed the Blair Witch Project. That's a point for Mark. Well done.
Thank fuck I'm back in the game. So guys, what did I go for Bravo B?
Okay, so I've gone for Birdemic.
What?
Interesting. He loves that film.
I do.
He loves garbage films.
It's a
films,
fucking great
so
film.
Fucking weird.
I rated it about a 9.
Such a weirdo.
I've gone for Nipples on the Batsuit. Batman and Robin.
Ben knows me very well.
Yes!
I love Birdemic, genuinely.
What?
Those fucking photo, like, is it like Microsoft Paint?
Yeah, it's atrocious.
I bought it on Blu-ray.
Jesus, Sage. Okay, so it is B. What do you think you've got for me?
I went for Battlefield Earth.
Ooh. Okay.
Because it's fucking shite.
It is atrocious.
I again went with Batman and Robin.
Ben gets a point.
Yes!
Batman and Robin. Jesus. It is terrible. I wanted to gouge my own eyes out and then juggle them for entertainment. Thanks for asking.
Two letters down, scores on the doors. I've got 3. Gemma and Mark have got 1 apiece.
I'll be honest, that's more points than I thought.
I did, yeah, absolutely.
Pretty good.
I thought we'd still be on 0.
What do you dudes think I have for the letter C?
To purely wind me up and piss me off, Clerks.
What he said, Clerks.
Oh, you're both wrong, but what? You get the point. It's Catwoman. But you get the points.
He's actually happy because he's fucking Kevin Smith.
I'll take that point. That's fine. You guys have it.
Okay, so what did I go for the letter C?
So I've gone controversial because I know you didn't enjoy it. I've gone for A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, interesting pick. Mm. I've gone Catwoman again.
Ben knows me well.
Yes!
What a pile of shite that was.
Absolute garbage.
It's not great, is it?
We're actually knowing people and the others in the room better
reasonably
than I
thought. Well, yeah.
Knowing me, knowing you, aha. So I'm on C. What do you think you got for me, for C?
I think this might have been, correct me if you're wrong because you're our number one fan, but your first rewatch, so it was Catwoman.
Oh.
Yeah, I went with the trifecta, Catwoman as well.
You guys may know me too well, so you guys get the point, but I actually went for Click.
Oh, the Adam Sandler remote control film.
God.
It's dog shit.
No.
But Mark and I get the points.
Honestly, I just want to throw up all over the TV. And
was that your first rewatch?
Catwoman.
Catwoman.
Yeah, it was. I think
sorry
it was.
About that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Cheers for that.
Okay, we are back around to the next letter. Scores on the doors. I've got 5. Gemma's got 2. Mark's got 3. So it's very, very close. What do I have, Mark, for D?
I'll be honest, the hardest letter of the lot. Mm-hmm. For me, I went for Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh, interesting.
You said D's the hardest letter of the lot.
It was, when I was selecting it, not to pronounce it.
Like a dick.
You're an
brilliant.
Idiot.
Are you even smoking crack?
Come on, what's your choice for Ben?
I'm sorry, I don't know why I find that funny. Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh, flip. You're both wrong. It's Devil's Advocate, which is one of the worst, hammiest films I've ever seen, but sadly you get the point.
Yay!
Dumb and Dumber 2, wank. It's annoying when you don't get a point, isn't it?
I
when
know.
You're like, what? Fuck
like,
you.
No, it's not right.
Come on then, guys. What did I get for D?
I've also gone for Dumb and Dumber 2.
I went with a film that I know you despise, Death Proof.
Oh.
Wow, that was probably the second to worst, but Dumb and Dumber
2. Yeah! Flip.
Fucking wank. God, look
Gemma
at the scores
gets
now.
The point. Oh, it's very close. It's very close.
It is just, it's fucking wank. D for me.
Yeah. Dumb and Dumber 2.
Dumb and Dumber 2, I've got it as well.
Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yes. Ben and Mark get the point.
We need credit, guys. We know each other.
We know us so well.
So before we move on to the next letter, scores on the doors. I've got 6. Mark has 5. Gemma has 4.
God damn,
very,
it's close.
Very close.
Oof.
Mark, what do I have for the letter E?
This was really tough. Really, really tough. But just purely to piss me off. I don't think you've even seen it. Elizabeth Town.
Gemma, what have you got?
I don't know why, but I went with The English Patient.
You are both wrong. It's E.T.
Oh.
What a fucking shit show that film is. Saccharine bollocks.
Mac and me tried to be.
Wishes
no
it was
points
that.
For anyone.
What did I go for the letter E?
Again, this is really tricky for you.
Yeah.
I've gone for Evan Almighty.
I don't know why.
This is absolute guesswork. I went Entourage.
Elektra.
Oh, I nearly had that. I nearly picked that.
Really, shit. Really
it's,
wank.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
No
Why did
again.
It get made? Why did it get made? Okay, what do you think that I've gone for E?
Well, I actually did also go with it as well for Elektra, because I thought you must have seen it.
That's
it's
terrible.
Fucking shite.
It is.
Again, pure guesswork. I went with Eat, Pray, Love.
Not for $1 million would I watch that. I actually went for Eyes Wide Shut.
Ah,
oh,
not
play.
Kubrick's finest work.
Never seen that.
Don't do it.
No points scored on letter E. So I'm still on 6, Mark on 5, Gemma on 4. We're round to F.
Oh, my Lord.
Mark, what film do I hate beginning with F? If you don't get this, you're out of the podcast.
Forrest Gump.
Gemma.
Forrest Gump.
You're both right. Of course it's Forrest Dump.
I love how much you hate that film. It's
shit.
So fun.
This is difficult, and I don't think I really get this.
Okay. All right, then. Well, I've gone, because we talked about it in the last episode, I've gone for 50 Shades of Grey.
I went with Gemma's. I went 50 Shades of Grey as well.
Friday the 13th, Freddy versus Jason. Fucking hell, that film shit. But
Gemma
you know
I,
it.
Gemma and I get the points.
Yes, Zynga.
Fuck.
Okay, so F me. What do you think?
So recently you talked about this on the topic. I think it was something you watched with your friends.
Okay.
Final Fantasy Advent Children, whatever it was. That shitty animation
it's
thing.
It's so wank.
Yeah.
I went with arguably the greatest film in history, Freddy Got Fingered.
It's Freddy Got Fingered.
Points are mine.
That's a great film.
Daddy, would you like some sausages?
That's not a
No,
film.
I don't.
Scores on the doors. I'm on 8. Gemma and Mark are both on 6. Still very, very close.
What's next in the alphabet?
It's G. G for... Oh, hang on. Golf.
Gamma.
Golf. Gammon.
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 God, Ben, this was tough.
Yeah.
I went with the 1998 Godzilla.
Ooh, interesting.
I know
pick.
That offended you.
Pooch, what have you gone for?
I went for Gobble Gobble. I went for Jiggly.
You're both wrong. It's Grimsby.
Oh, did we miss miss
worst
that?
Worst fucking film ever
oh
made.
Oh my god, how did we miss that?
Shit.
No points.
Tits.
What did I go for?
I also went with Gigli.
I went with Grimsby.
That absolute crap shite, the new Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay.
No points. Gemma.
Go on. What have I gone for, Jay?
This was tough. I think you've gone for the Ghost in the Shell remake or whatever that film was. It's not whatever it is.
I've literally erased it from my memory.
I went with Gigli.
Oh, I've gone for Ghost Rider.
Oh, God.
because you know how much I love Nick Cage. Nick Cage was not mesmerising.
That was a good film.
You're right. He was not mesmerising in that film. That is a fact.
Wow.
So we're around to H. Scores on the doors. I'm on 8. Gemma and Mark still on 6. What have I got for H, Mark?
You'll piss me off. Howard the Duck.
Gemma.
Not the trees. Happening.
I've gone with Hereditary.
Wow.
Atrocious.
Have any of you seen Midsommar?
Yes.
Not yet. No.
Yes,
Gemma,
I have.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Don't. It's fucked up.
What have I gone for H?
Okay. I've gone for Halloween, but the Rob Zombie version.
Oh, shit.
I know you do not like
great
that.
Great shout. Mm.
It's not right, though, is it?
I'm not saying.
We'll see how great it is
it's
in
like,
a minute.
Well done. Yeah. Okay.
I went with The Happening.
Human Centipede.
Oh, my God. You know what? I've never watched that.
Don't.
And I have no desire to either.
Cack.
No, thank you.
For Gemma now, for yeah. H, honestly, this is just a wild guess.
Yeah.
So it's Howard the Duck again.
I went with High Fidelity.
You're both wrong, I'm afraid.
Ooh.
The Happening.
Oh, High Fidelity is a great show. You get really weirdly upset about
it. She does, doesn't she?
It's just fucking weird. But I'm sorry, but I mean, High Fidelity or... Killer Plants.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I'm with
no,
you.
Thank you.
We are round to the final letter of this week's game.
I want
to
carry on.
The scores haven't changed for a couple of rounds. I'm still on 8, Gemma and Mark on 6. Letter I. Mark, what have I got for I?
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of Crystal Skull.
Oh, interesting. Gemma.
Interstellar.
Oh, Gemma's shit. Right. It's Interstellar. Point for Pooch.
You hate Christ. That film.
Because it's fucking
much.
Shit.
People are screaming at home now.
I know, yeah.
You don't get it. A film that tells me that love is more powerful than science can eat a dick.
There we go. What have I got for the letter I for Indigo?
I also went Interstellar.
Indiana Jones, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Ben knows me.
Oh, yeah.
Aliens. No. What? Fucking bullshit.
Nuclear fridge. Hello.
This was hard for Pooch.
Yeah, what do you think I got?
I would love to think that you're on the same wavelengths as me and you went for Indy.
I went with Indiana Jones in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull as well.
Okay, well, you guys get the point, but I actually went for the Inbetweeners movie part 2.
It's not that
what?
Bad.
It's
terrible.
It's not great, but it's not that
I'm
bad.
I'm sorry, but entertainment when someone is drinking somebody else's piss. Oh, yeah, sign me up.
Well,
no.
It's very close, I think.
It's very
scores.
Close. So that brings us to the end of round 1. As I say, the scores are cumulative, but at the minute, I'm out in the lead with 10.
Well done.
And Gemma and Mark both have 7. So it's very, very close, all to play for. Tune in next time for round 2 of Alphabets 2.
Electric Bungalow!
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It could be something old, it could be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. It seems, it might just be me, but it seems like there's been a lot of hot shit come out recently.
Heck
so many albums, new TV shows, Apple Plus has just launched, so new services as well. A lot of hot content out there, and I want to know what you've brought. Gemma, I'm going to start with you. What's your pick this week?
I've gone for a horror film,
ooh.
And it's on Amazon Prime, and it's called Hell House LLC.
Mm.
Now, obviously in the spirit of Halloween, I was on the lookout for a new scary movie that was going to frighten the absolute bejesus out of me. And this is an absolute blast from start to finish. You know, people can download and stream it now, so you don't have to pay any sweet cash with it too, which is even better. So it's using the found footage premise, which I'm a huge fan of. And at the start, we're at an opening night of a haunted house in New Jersey. You know those ones where there's usually people dressed up as clowns or really weird beings and they try and scare you, like, oh my God! And then you go and do about your day.
All right, yeah.
It's kind of that. So we see film footage of participants going into the house, but something is up. Something's afoot and people are screaming for real and running out the house due to pure unadulterated fear. But what happens on that fateful night? What happened? I'm genuinely asking.
Oh,
what
happens?
Do you not have a...
We got drunk.
All right, I'll carry on then. So found footage is then played to reveal these group of friends who are renovating a haunted house in preparation of that tragic opening night. And it turns out they were not the only people there. Oh my God!
Dun dun dun!
Right, yeah. Shit your pants moment.
That's original.
Yes, but it's genuinely creeping and unsettling to watch, and there's no musical score whatsoever. There's no major CGI effects. And I think it really ramps up the tension and suspense too. And the scares, they're genuinely terrifying. So I made the mistake of watching this on my own when my other decent half was working nights. He was away and it was just me. It was my lovely little cat, Jack, and the darkness. That was all it was. And I thought, this will be fun. I'll just watch it. I was too scared to take a piss. I got really hungry and thirsty at one point. I thought, no, I'll wait until like, I put on something background and lots of light. I wanted to watch it, and there are some really genuinely scary moments within it. And I fucking love that, because there's not that many scary movies out anymore. It's very, you know, obvious. You know when the scares are coming. Mm. I think jump scares are usually built to be, you know, the thing that gets people to see the cinema.
Films these days, they always telegraph the jump scares. You always know that they're coming, and then they don't have any effect.
But what makes this film so great is there's no jump scares. And you have to really look in the background to see what comes up. And I really appreciate that. And so I'm happy to recommend this film time and time again. I lost count how many times I criticised some of the characters of their choices. You know, I mean, fucking hell, if someone's going to say, oh, I suppose I'll stay for one more night, when some serious shit has gone down, you've got to question their life motives, surely. And also, I must have said the word no, like I was singing Two Unlimited's No Limits so many times. I was just like, nope, no, no, nope, nope, no, no. But despite that... No,
that's a great tune.
Techno.
Best bit, this whole song. But, you know, despite that being said, you know, it's so much fun. It's a heck of a lot of fun. Anybody who loves horror is going to enjoy this film.
What's it called again?
Hell House LLC.
I've never heard of it. Have you, Mark?
Rolls off the tongue, that one. Yeah. No, I've never. But Amazon has quite a lot of these weird sort of horrors that go straight to DVD or straight to stream.
Do.
And there's some little gems in there if you look.
Oh, that is... I'll tell you what, this one is the shiniest gem of all.
Wow.
No, our own shiny
you
gem.
You are.
No, stop it, nailed you it. Guys. I'll pay you the 20 quid later.
Nice.
What have you got, Mark?
I've gone for something different. So I've built... films, I've brought TV series, I've brought books, but this time round it's going to be a graphics company who I'm really blown away by.
Love
so
it.
They're called Alley Cat Graphics. The way I got introduced to them, I saw them at a Comic-Con and I bought one of their products. So it was like a VHS packaging, and when you opened it up, inside you had like cards, you had like stickers, you had a really nice limited edition badge, and it was for Jaws. But I didn't realize when I bought the set how much stuff was in it. So you get all these stickers. I'm just showing them both a picture, but you get like an Amity style. Each one is in a video cassette packaging.
Okay.
They've done stuff like Alien. They've done Nightmare on Elm Street. So you get all these different things.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Can you stick those pictures up on Instagram for the listeners?
Please. Yeah, they're £20 each. But when you see, you get comics, you get little graphics, you get all these different stickers. When they did Alien, they did a replica of the actual badge that Ripley wears. It's all done in like the proper shiny seal, so it's all really solidly done. You get all these really good things. But the badges themselves aren't cheap. They're decent metal enamel badges. So there's one they did for
Critters.
I would pay 10 quid for that, just for the badge itself.
They
do them all separately as well. So you get art cards for Ash versus Evil Dead. But look at the actual badge. You got Bruce with his hand being strangled. But they're detailed. They're really decent quality goods. One guy in his wife, I think, or his girlfriend, runs the company. They're UK based, and I thought to myself, are they going to do well at this? I was talking to him at the Comic-Con. He said, you know, we put it all out on Instagram. The VHS edition for Jaws sold out in less than an hour.
Wow.
And
wow.
He gets them to you within 2 days after they've gone on sale.
Good lad.
But the problem is, because there's 14 of them, now I want to go back and try and get them all, because there's Alien. And because I'm a completist, when it's sitting on the shelf, number 10 was The Thing.
Oh,
and I missed it.
I missed it.
So someone out there must have one. If you're listening, let me know. DM me. I'll buy it off you. But I want them all. And you know that he's going to keep bringing them out. Yeah. Every time they sell out in less time. But just the guy's working really hard. He's done some really nice screen prints. He's done stickers. Go on his site. I think I showed you recently, I had pictures of, I think there's They Live or The Thing on my laptop
before
I got to skip the end.
Yep.
That was done by him. They're like £3 for free stickers, including delivery. They're not expensive. They make great presents. But just the guy's working his ass off and deserves some kind of limelight.
What's awesome. The name again?
Alley Cat Graphics. But if you go on alleycatgraphics.com.
Yeah.
But we've been there with Headshot. We've been there with stuff like Dark Bunny, Last Exit. These guys are up there with the big boys. And honestly... absolutely beautiful work.
Nice. Alley Cat Graphics.
Yeah, a bit different. You'll spend a shitload of money.
I saw that Nancy with the Freddy Krueger hand in her hair.
So
that's
good.
Beautiful.
It's so good. Mm-hmm.
Excellent stuff. I've gone with a gig. I saw a band called Sun live at The Crossing in Birmingham last weekend. And Sun, if you've not heard of them, and I wouldn't blame you if you hadn't, they're an experimental drone metal band from Seattle. And the gig, it's one of the weirdest, hardest to describe, but also strangely compelling gigs I've ever been to. Before the show starts, they pump the room full of dry ice, so it creates this heavy fog, making the stage almost invisible.
Wow.
And then the band comes out wearing these big hooded robes and launch into these slow, droney songs that are insanely heavy and insanely loud. But because of the fog, you almost never see the band. Throughout the course of the show, occasionally, you'll see the machine head of a guitar poke through the smoke, or the top of a robe. You just never see that. It's one of the weirdest, most ethereal cool. atmospheres I've ever experienced. There are no vocals and there are no percussion. It's just guitars, just slow drone guitars.
Wow.
And it's the weirdest fucking thing. You're listening to it like, I don't know if I get this. I don't know if I like it. Yeah. But then about half an hour in, some dude with a trombone comes out and he starts doing this really...
He's not meant to be there.
Just someone ran on the stage.
He thought it was an open mic night.
And he starts doing this really slow, mournful, like...
Coronation Street.
It was the Coronation Street theme. But it was incredible, and that was the point when it clicked for me. I was like, I love this. I don't know why, I can't describe why. And the sound, the noise he was making with the trombone, it reminded me of the Blade Runner score.
Oh.
But a trombone rather than a synth. But it was absolutely amazing. And the set was 90 minutes long, and their songs are so slow and droney.
They played four songs.
Really? They literally played four songs.
You get an extra point at the quiz.
But I only know this from looking at setlist.fm, because all the music blends into one long soundscape. So it's never clear where one song ends and the next one begins. And they're known for being one of, if not the loudest band in metal. So I went with my mate Macca, who's a big fan of them. And he was like, you have to wear earphones. I'm like, fuck you, I'm not wearing earphones. I'm a man, I ain't wearing no goddamn earphones. Shit. You get there and they start playing and you think your eardrums are going to burst. When Gemma gets all high-pitched?
Yeah.
It's like that, but for 90 minutes.
Wow. I wish I could step into your shoes. I really do.
But luckily, they sell earplugs at the merch
stand.
So I went and got some branded Sun earplugs to put them in, and it was a necessity. But the music, because it's so loud and so deep and so dark, the whole place rumbles. You feel the sound coming up through your feet, through your bones. And there was a bit where I was kind of leaning against a wall, and the wall was vibrating. So it's not, you're not just listening to a band or watching a band, it's a 4D experience.
Wow.
It's fucking insane. And the crowd wasn't what I was expecting. Because they're a metal band, I thought it'd be a load of crusty old metalers like me, but it was a lot of hipsters.
Wow.
Oh, nice. Like my kind.
Yeah, wall-to-wall hipsters. I was about to say wearing flat caps, then I realised I'm wearing my fucking flat cap, aren't I?
Today.
So yeah, I'm just as bad. But because hipsters, they like kind of avant-garde weirdness, and that's
you
absolutely
what
it was.
You don't get it. You just need to let the music do the talking.
That's exactly what it was like. It was full of people like that. And I've tried listening to a couple of their records, and they don't do anything for me on record. But being there, being in the room, they were strangely euphoric and utterly mesmerizing. A hell of an experience. Loved it.
I really want to.
It sounds
try
crazy.
It is crazy. It is crazy.
How big was this venue?
Weird. It's The Crossing in Birmingham that is, I don't know, probably about half the size of Rock City. It's a fairly small.
Oh, I see. Bloody hell, that must have been really good then.
Yeah, it was. Just bone rattling noise.
I love a bit of bone rattling, me.
Exactly, I bet you do. Rattled a few bones in your time, ain't you, love?
Hey!
We were up the road watching Thrice
and
Refused.
We were.
It was fantastic because I don't think you'd met them at this point, Gemma, but. Macca and I, we got to Birmingham early so we could hit the booze. Uh-huh. And we were just walking down the street, walking towards another pub. And then up coming the street was Mark and his posse. I was like, oh, shit!
In the middle of Birmingham.
Really?
Fucking mental.
And then Mark said, yeah, we'll come and meet you in the pub in a bit. I knew he wasn't going to, because I don't believe a word that ever comes out of his mouth. So we never saw him again.
To be fair, the gig started really early.
Did,
and there was three support bands. So it was really early. And the whole thing finished at 11.
How good was the support band?
Very.
You should have come and joined us in Scruffy Murphy's. After the gig, we went to Scruffy's, which is one of the best rock pubs in the country.
Oh.
And we just stayed there till they kicked us out and got absolutely fucking leathered. A good time was had by all.
I was driving home, so
shame.
That would have not been
same
good.
It.
That sounds awesome though, dude.
It does.
Very good.
Yeah, very, very odd. Very, very
but
weird.
But you're never going to listen to them at home.
I would never, as I've said, I've tried, and I probably wouldn't go and see them if they toured again.
Yeah.
I'd probably go in 10 years to see them again. Yeah. It's not something you're going to clamour to see every year, but an experience.
I would imagine too, it's one of those gigs that really would not be affected if it was filmed in any way. You'd have to be there.
Yeah, there'll be no point because you'd just be filming fog. dog that people are going to see.
Sounds like my kind of thing.
I have two concerns with this. The first one is they could hire session musicians if they couldn't be asked to come over and you wouldn't know.
Anyone
could jump on stage.
Yeah.
And secondly, if a band does a great set and you're like, more, more, they come back on and play another song, that's 45 minutes.
That's true.
The sound guys and everyone will be like, fuck this, yeah. I want to go home.
They must have a flat no on calls policy.
It's like all of a sudden you'd
be no on call.
Yeah, you'd have to pay for 24 hours car parking. Yeah. You'd missed your train.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
But wow. Yeah,
absolutely amazing.
Maybe if they play a festival, I'll check them out.
Yeah, I can't imagine if they play a festival. No. Maybe no.
Summerfest. Just them for 3 days playing 12 songs.
Would you like to hear what's been brought to us on social media this week? Our good friend Darren Wolf on Facebook. He said, who watches The Watchmen? Answer, you should. This is top tier TV, well written with great performances and a soundtrack to die for. Have you guys started watching Watchmen yet?
I've been the most strict I've ever been when it comes to TV. I'm going to wait and then binge them all. It's fucking tough, but I'm doing it.
Fair play
to you. I echo Mark. I've not watched it yet, but I'm looking forward to.
At this point, there have been two episodes and I've watched them both. It's incredible. It's a weird new spin on the universe that Alan Moore created. Brilliantly acted. Regina King is killer in it.
I love Regina King.
I love her too. And as Darren's pointed out there, the soundtrack is to die for. The soundtrack is by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yes! Brilliant.
If you like any of those Trent Reznor soundtracks,
Gone Girl,
all that kind of stuff.
Social network.
You'll fucking love it. I was just sat there just bopping my head like, this is the shit. Absolutely incredible. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the next episode of that, which will be on in the UK, I think, tomorrow.
Nice.
Sweet.
On Facebook, Stu Reed has said, I've read Nikki Sixx's The Heroin Diary for the second time this year. A very dark and bleak look into the world of addiction and how he managed to bring himself back from absolute rock bottom.
He actually died, didn't he? And then he came back to life.
Quite possibly.
I don't know enough about him, but I know that he's had a very colourful life with lots of drugs and lots of women.
Lots of women.
That must be very interesting to see what he got. I wonder how honest he is.
Is he Motley Crue, Nikki Sixx?
He was,
I've never been into them, really. They're not my cup of tea, but I would read that book.
Yeah.
On Twitter, James Clues at Chewymon has said, on Becoming a God in Central Florida, set in the 90s, it stars Kirsten Dunst, who lies, schemes and cons her way up through the ranks of a cultish pyramid scheme that drove her family to ruin. Dunst is superb.
I like her.
I love Kirsten Dunst. Now, this show isn't on in the UK yet, so, you know, let's assume that I had seen it, which I can't have because it's not on in the UK yet, but let's assume that I had. What I would say, in theory, is that it's fucking amazing and she kills it.
Wow.
She's superb.
Well,
it's dark,
gets
it's funny.
A flight to America every week to watch it.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, I'm purely guessing here. Yeah. I'm guessing that she's incredible and it's definitely worth a watch.
Would you say that she's topped her performance in Elizabethtown?
Stop trying to make Elizabethtown happen!
It's not a thing.
So that's a very good one. When it comes out in the UK, which it should do soon enough, please do watch it.
It's on the list.
On Facebook, Martin Street has said, my recommendation is a convention called For the Love Of. I recently went to their horror one that had a Lost Boys reunion featuring Kiefer Sutherland, Alex Winter and Jason Patrick. And they have a sci-fi one coming up featuring Carl Urban, Dolph Lundgren, John Bernthal and Ron Perlman. Well worth checking out. What are your thoughts, Mark?
I was there.
Oh,
it
yeah.
was very fucking good. Do you know what? They're going to make massive movements in the industry. So at the moment, all we ever hear about is MCM and Showmasters.
Yeah.
MCM is a really nice con, but doesn't get the great guests.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Showmasters, they've got great guests, but there's no atmosphere and you're just treated like cattle queuing up for fucking signatures. Yeah. They've got the balance. They go there, you get to see all the famous stars, you get to see these panels. The guy from Super Nerds, Ben, is hosting all the panels. He's doing a great job. And not just the fact that they just talk to someone, they get every guest that's there stage. Kiefer Sutherland's there talking. You get Alex Winter, all the big names are there and they're doing great panels and it just feels like a fucking great event that's just going to get bigger and bigger. Mm. And they're brilliant.
Oh, sorry, I did see the photos and it looked amazing. It looked like a really fantastic weekend. And I think what I took away from the photos is it really does play service for the fans. It thinks of the fans first.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key to a really great con.
Do you know what? I'd love to hear more from Alex Winter. And if I wanted to do that, how would I go about it, Mark?
I would wait a while until I can confirm when it's gone, Mark, and me. Yes.
Have I dropped a big hint there?
You heard it here first, everyone.
Yeah, they're going to be great. And what was the best thing about it? You know when you normally get photos done at cons, they put like in the background, MCM Comic Con.
Yes.
They created the cave from Lost Boys.
Amazing.
So you're there, or the bridge, or whatever, and
like,
that's what you want.
Michael.
That's what you want.
Michael.
Martin, for his birthday, his missus had got him a pass, so he had a photo with every member of Lost Boys.
Awesome.
So he sat there with Kiefer Sutherland, all of them.
What about,
Michael?
Is it Tim Capello, the saxophone
guy?
Yeah,
all of them.
I saw the video. My God, he knows how to put on a bloody
how
good
cool
show.
Is that?
Yes.
Incredible.
And
playing the soundtrack live.
And I still believe.
I do.
That's awesome. On Instagram, Matt Freitas, aka Late Night late history has said, I'm late to the party on the TV show Veronica Mars, but recently watched it and it was superb.
Oh, good.
I've never seen Veronica
Mars. No, me neither. People say it's great.
It was the kind of breakthrough role for Kristen Bell,
that's
wasn't
right.
it? Yeah, and I know I've never seen it because I don't think it's on any of the UK streamers. It's not on Netflix or Amazon, but I want to watch it and I've never been able to do
and
so.
And Kristen Bell, I mean, that's enough. She's great. I love her. Absolutely wonderful.
She's beautiful.
She's lovely.
Very talented.
Yeah, I recommend her next week.
Brilliant.
On Facebook, another good friend of the podcast, Ricky Hill, he said he hugely recommends NWA Power on YouTube. It's extremely old school wrestling. The psychology is ridiculously good. The promos are outstanding. And while it's a little rough around the edges, the storytelling is better than anything currently in WWE or AEW.
Ooh.
Now, it's only been going about a month. They've had four episodes. I've watched the first two. He's not wrong when he says it's old school.
Yeah.
Like the production values, it's like watching Bullseye.
That's good.
That's the first thing I thought of when I was watching it. It's
can
Bullseye.
You win a set of steak knives?
I hope so, yeah.
I'm in.
But yeah, it's I must admit, it's not for me.
No.
It's too old school for me. For example, the current NWA World Tag Team Champions are the Rock and Roll Express. Now, they're legends in the business, but they started wrestling in 1983. Both of them are in their fucking 60s.
Oh.
They look an absolute state, and they're the tag champs. I'm glad that Ricky's enjoying it, and a lot of old school wrestling fans are really digging NWA Power. I'm not one of them. But it's Billy Corgan's
I was going to say, it's him, yeah. Good on him. But they've been really shite in the past, and I've heard they're doing good stuff now.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting there, and there's a lot of familiar faces in there, and there's a woman in it called Camille, and God damn. I'm not going to say anything more than that, but Ricky will smell what I'm cooking.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there.
Do you know, like, the tag team champions, when they're doing, like, trash talk, do you think one of them's always like, eh? What? Pardon?
They do seem like they've got hearing aids.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Are,
bless.
And the thing is, they've still got their feathered mullet haircuts that they had 30 years ago.
Oh my God, that's so
sexy. Like the wrestler.
Moving on, George Hagen on Twitter, at George Hagen. I got to go to an early screening of Edward Norton's new film, Motherless Brooklyn. I knew nothing about the movie, but it's really good.
Oh.
I've heard mixed reviews of that, because Norton stars in it and directs it, I believe.
Okay, interesting.
I'm not sure. People have said it's good. If I wanted to find out more about it, do you know who's in the film?
Go on.
The man himself from
The One and Only.
My Name is Earl.
Oh, well, which one?
Come on. Not the main guy.
There's a couple of
them. His sidekick from Morats.
You know, the you one. Interviewed him. Forgot come on,
name.
You know
come
this.
Come on,
Ethan Suplee.
Yeah, he talks about it on markandme.com. So there we go.
I
completely forgot. Like, Ethan Suplee's not an easy name to remember. But I'm intrigued because he's been out the scene acting. So
Edward Norton has a reputation for being difficult, I think, so people don't want to work with him. Like, that's why Marvel ditched him, because he was the Incredible Hulk, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And they booted him out for Mark Ruffalo. But yeah, I like the dude, and I want to see him doing good stuff again.
If he's around for a bit, I'd be first in line and say, come on then.
And that's the thing, apparently, even though he has this reputation on set, a lot of people say that he's a great guy with a great sense of humour, so it's a shame. But anyway, moving on. On Facebook, Joe Myers has said, I recently binged and can recommend season one of Daybreak on Netflix. It's a post-apocalyptic comedy about a group of kids trying to survive each other and monsters in California after a nuclear bomb attack. Shades of Mad Max, Buffy and Lost.
Fuck me, that sounds great.
It sounds like Gemma TV.
I don't know why, but I just thought, wasn't it that like morning show that was on ITV a few years ago?
Daybreak, it was, yeah.
Oh, that's changed.
I was like, why is he recommending sending that Piers Morgan's friends in?
Sounds great, though.
But it does sound like my shoot.
Yeah, it's been getting good reviews I've seen so
far. And the thing on Netflix.
On Facebook, Russell Osborne has said, Dolomite is my name on Netflix.
Oh,
what a comeback by Eddie Murphy. It's very funny, uplifting and inspirational. Now we can forgive him for crap like Norbit and Meet Dave. Not quite, dude. I'm not ready to forgive him for that shit yet.
I've heard so many good things about this.
I keep meaning to watch it and haven't yet got around to it.
Yeah, I've not got around. It is on my list.
Yeah.
The other night I got in, it was really late and there was nothing on telly and I was just flicking through and I was like, I can't even be asked to stick on Amazon. So I just couldn't be asked. I just left the telly on and I hate him, but Piers Morgan was there interviewing Mel B, and that she was like talking.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that Eddie is the father of their daughter. I never knew that.
He knocked her up and then binned her off.
Yeah.
Also, something to know, Piers Morgan is an absolute toss bucket.
Yeah, he's a pissant.
But I never knew
prick.
That they basically had a kid together and then he did a runner.
He did.
Yeah. That's a shame.
Lovely chap. And then finally on Twitter, SoCal Lukey Dookie at Dookie Social has said, because there's never enough The Office in our lives, my recommendation is The Office Ladies podcast featuring Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey. They break down one episode each week and give first-hand stories from production. It'll take your 26th rewatch to the next level.
Oh, I love this podcast so much.
Yeah, now you dudes have listened to this so far, haven't you?
I nearly brought it as a recommendation.
Me too!
It felt a bit lazy because we talked about it last week, but I've listened to all of them so far. This week they had Dwight on. I'm not going to call him his real name. It's Dwight.
That is his real name. Yeah.
And he came on and he was brilliant. And that each, Ben, you're going to fucking love this because you find out all the insights. The fact that, like, Phyllis was a writer on set.
Yeah.
And they were like, can you do this scene? And when they were doing the acting scenes and reading out, they're like, actually, you're perfect for this. Yeah. Jump on board.
She was part of the casting crew, wasn't she? She was just running lines with people. Yeah.
And Toby Flenderson was just a writer. Mm. And they got him to do a few lines and then they turned Toby into a character.
Yeah. Most of the cast, basically, if you're signed up there, even just to be like a runner, you'll probably get the part of someone like Ryan.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Oh, I love it. And it genuinely wants, it makes you want to watch the episode as soon as
they're so if I need anything.
So just getting in from work.
Yeah. But here's the kicker. Angela is a bloody delight.
Yeah, she says she's a lovely person. Yeah. They're best friends. They're fun. But when they were like on set, they would just sit there and they're having to do the office work. The directors and stuff would make them sit there doing Excel spreadsheets so it really looks like they're doing work and stuff. Yeah. It's really bad.
So you're basically doing a 9 to 5.
For 9 hours. Well, and they're like, for fuck's sake. And Dwight's like, I didn't have to do that. I was off that day. It's so much fun.
But there's been 4 episodes so far, haven't there? Yeah. Well, it's Sunday night, so I've got to do my ironing tonight.
Stick it on.
So I'm going to stick it on while I do my ironing.
Yeah.
Good call.
Skip to recommend, buy one of those irons where you stick all your clothes and it does it all. You know, those like press things, they're pretty good.
A Corby trouser press. Yeah. I've dismantled my Corby trouser press.
Done. Useful. It's a good recommendation.
Thank you so much for all your recommendations. Please keep them coming in on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or email oldschoolstylypodcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. As I said at the start, I was absolutely knackered, but now I'm kind of wired.
I am.
Yeah.
Should we do the next episode tonight?
Should we knock it out? Knock it out quick.
Yeah, let's start. You're used to doing that.
Let's start a fight club.
But it's been a good one. I have enjoyed it very much. But the next one is going to be just as good, if not better.
I think it's genuinely going to be bigger, better, and more fulfilling.
Bigger, better, harder, faster, stronger, longer.
Yeah, it is. Think about the main review.
And uncut.
The main review.
The main review.
The Irishman.
What the fuck? I know.
I love how he says the Irishman rather than the Irishman.
The Irishman.
It's just a documentary about the Irish.
It's just bigging up Ireland.
Martin Scorsese's new film.
Right?
The cast.
Well.
Uncle Buscemi.
Uncle Buscemi.
He's not in it.
He's not. Not Buscemi. The guy Funeral I'm on about.
Well, no, I don't know this. Joe Pesci.
Yes, he's back.
Buscemi.
Uncle Buscemi. I've done the whole episode without fucking up.
Wow. Wally.
Let's
yeah.
So satirical.
Pesci's back. How good is that? Because we've talked on the podcast.
Yeah.
They might as well stick fucking, what's his name in it as well?
Buscemi?
No, from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Rick Moranis.
If he's back in it, then people are definitely listening to our podcast.
Big time. Gemma, what is our rewatch?
I'm glad you asked. We're going to be rewatching the original Korean and best Old Boy.
That's mental.
That is incredible.
It's going to be a lot of things to talk
about.
What
a fucking week.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be superb. And our topic of conversation is going to be a good, fun one as well. We're going to be discussing our top 3 supervillains.
Oh,
I can't fuck
God.
That up, really.
Well, I hope I don't know.
E.T. Mark, idiot.
Bring the shark from Jaws.
So as I said earlier, we're talking about essentially the villains from comic book movies. Yeah. They don't need to have superpowers, but then on the other side, you couldn't have like a James Bond villain.
Right.
They're not supervillains in the sense, you know, we're looking for the Jokers, the Lokis of the world, that kind of thing.
James Bond, they're just villains.
They're just villains. They're
nothing
not
super about them.
So it's the top 3 super villains.
Cool. There we go.
I think the shark in Jaws is super.
No.
Stop immediately.
Okay.
Oh, Rutger Hauer in Blade Runner, though. He's pretty bloody super.
Yeah.
To be fair. Oh, there you go, decided.
Do you know what we should do one day? Not as in the podcast, we should watch Super. That is a great
Super.
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really
Shut up,
good.
Crime.
What a great film that
a great
is.
Film with Dwight.
Dwight Paye.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, I do like that film a lot.
Anyway, sorry, I'm really getting off track.
And we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. Of course, we will give away another huge sack full of prizes. We will give you our next round of recommendations. And we will play round 2 of Alphabet's 2 Electric Boogaloo.
I'm so freaking excited.
We're also masturbating over David Lynch.
Whoa.
That's fucking hell.
That's going to be, it's going to be quite a weird masturbate.
He is so
did I forget the space?
He'll be in black and white with lots of shit going on. But
and then there'll be someone dressed as a camel in the corner.
Think of the social media will go crazy for that. He is such an icon.
He is, but it's going to be a little bit interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be very good. But let's bring this to a close because I haven't eaten all day.
Oops.
And his Dark Materials is about to start on BBC.
Oh, yeah. We should clear up.
So I need you to fuck off out of my house.
Okay. Bye.
See you in 2 weeks.
That's a magic number. Three. Yes, it is. It's the magic number. Three. Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, Mace, Dub, and me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music. Racing.